David Harrell. We also have a special correspondent who's going to be joining us and helping us out with our coverage at WrestleMania on Fight TV. Jason Solomon of the Solomonster Sounds Off podcast will be our special correspondent all weekend long.
Replacement for me?
As well. Yeah.
Obviously, it takes
he's reliable. I listen to his show every week, his podcast every week.
Very reactionary.
He is a tremendous host on his own, without the distraction of you. So I did not want to mess up his mojo. But Sound Monster Sounds Off. Jason Solomon will be joining us as a correspondent that weekend on Fight TV.
It's business time, baby.
The Sound Monster Sounds Off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Very happy to announce that I will be a special correspondent doing interviews on behalf of the Pro Wrestling Report and Fight TV at WrestleCon to air on Fight TV. Damian Nelson and SoCal Val will be broadcasting live and free on Fight TV Friday and Saturday from WrestleCon from 1 to 3 p.m. Eastern. And some of the interviews that I'll be doing will be airing on the show on both days. So if you cannot watch it live, it'll be archived thereafter. You can get the Fight TV app for free in iTunes and the Google Play Store, or go to fight.tv/PWR to download. That's F-I-T-E. .tv/PWR. Should be a lot of fun. You know, Fight TV is also airing the ROH Supercard of Honor pay-per-view next Saturday with the Hardys against the Young Bucks in a ladder match. So if you want to watch the ROH show and you're not in Lakeland, the Fight TV app is the place to go for that as well. This is episode 488 of the Solomonster Sounds Off here for Sunday, March 26th, 2017. I am the Solomonster. 16 years to the day of the final episode of WCW Monday Nitro. That was the infamous Raw Nitro simulcast. One of the most memorable nights in the history of the business. And one of the saddest. I don't think the wrestling business ever really fully recovered from the loss of WCW. And as bad as WCW was there at the end, they had a lot of great matches. And moments over the years, you gotta look up, you know, you just gotta look up the positive side sometimes. So I encourage everybody to go back in the archives and check out. I did this 15-week countdown stretching from the end of 2015 into the beginning of last year of the greatest WCW matches of all time. I ranked the top 15 WCW matches ever because last year was the 15-year anniversary of the death of WCW. So, one of my favorite things about that was just talking to DDP about his match with Goldberg at Halloween Havoc 98, you know, and look at him now. That was almost 20 years ago. It'll be 20 years next year. And here it is in 2017, DDP's going into the Hall of Fame and Goldberg is headlining WrestleMania as the champion. The spirit of WCW lives on. Hey, big thank you to everybody who's been taking advantage of our Audible offer. A lot of you have been jumping on that. I encourage all of you to do so. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. That's our own custom link. You want to get yourself a free audiobook. All you got to do is use that link. Sign up. You get a free 30-day trial. You can sample the service. You get to keep one audiobook of your choosing. It doesn't have to be a wrestling book, but there's tons of them on there. Ryback has a motivational book, plus he talks about his career, so that's up there right now if you want life lessons from the big guy. AJ Mendez, her book is coming out in just probably a couple of weeks. I think it's right after WrestleMania. That Tuesday, I believe, is when her book, Crazy is My Superpower, narrated by AJ herself, is when the book drops. You don't have to wait until April 4th, though. You can use our Audible link right now and basically reserve your copy for free. So I don't know why you wouldn't want to take advantage of that. This book is sounds interesting. I think this book might make some news once it comes out. So you can hear AJ in her own words. Again, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. They do have tons of other books, non-wrestling books, that you can cash in on. Again, if you don't like the service, if it's not for you, you can cancel during the 30 days. You don't get billed. And the book belongs to you, so it's a win-win situation. So definitely support the podcast, take advantage of that Audible offer while it lasts. And also, if you want to become a PayPal VIP and support the show, you can do that as well. TheSolomonster.com is the place to go. You'll see the PayPal link on the right-hand side of the page. We had a pretty big surge in donations this week here heading into WrestleMania, which is going to be a busy work week for me. So I do appreciate all of your support. I want to say thank you this week to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Out of Control Cody Thomas, the Florida Freebird Bryant Becerra, the Dark Serpent Derek Gibbs, Damn Straight Michael Dorsey, the Marietta Mahler Alexandra Mata, Rolex Robin Party. Again, I sound like I'm narrating a Royal Rumble call here. Kind of a big deal, Corey Blake, Nemesis Nathan Moyers, Mass Grave, Micah Harshaw, the Bakersfield Brawler, Kevin Velotto, Clean Living, Chris Ludeck, Scott the Stump Woodford, Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, Bobby the Wizard Waldrop, Adam Code Red Kowalkowski, and shout out to Stephen Wise Guy Wysocki, who just celebrated a birthday on Friday. I hope you got everything you wanted. The Prince of Pleasantville, Emilio Crockett, Nicholas the Devious DeSimone, Nasty Nick Goss, Metalhead Michael Babers, AOK DJ Gunning, the Chapel Hill High Flyer Kyle George, the Brooklyn Bombers, Jamel and Isaiah Walker. Jamel is a longtime listener going all the way back to episode 87. And here we are now up to 488. That's a long time. The Wilmington Warlord, Tahir Williams, and finally here, Tyler the Boss Williams. No relation. Tyler runs a YouTube channel called, appropriately enough, Tyler Williams, and he will be hosting three WWE Network gift card giveaways as part of three separate live streams on his channel over WrestleMania weekend, Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. and again on Sunday at 7 p.m. And so to enter, just go to youtube.com/Tyler Williams, hit the subscribe button, and the most active commenters on the live streams will be entered into a random drawing with each winner getting a gift card. So if you do not have a WWE Network subscription and you want to check out NXT TakeOver and WrestleMania and all that stuff, this would be a good time to get in on that. So thank you again to everybody who made a donation. Also, I want to say shout out to Sky, by the way, longtime listener, celebrated his Dirty 30 last weekend, so happy birthday. Hey, if you're looking for more Simon Dean references in your life, I've got a podcast I want you guys to check out. It's the Bite That Wrestling Podcast, talking all the latest in WWE and Simon Dean. You can check him out every Wednesday. Just search for Bite That. That's B-Y-T-E. Bite That in iTunes or go to BiteThat.com. So definitely give those guys a listen. Okay, so some quick notes about Orlando next weekend before we get into all the news here, and there's a lot to get to. Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to Webmaster Mike from SE Scoops about this vacation coming up, and he responds back to me. He's like, yeah, some vacation. I'm like, I'm not exactly going to be sitting on the beach drinking beers all weekend. So for those of you who have asked me, I've gotten a bunch of questions. Hey, I'm coming to Orlando. Where are you going to be? What events are you going to? I figure I'll just mention it here. So my plan, and this is subject to change, but my, because this is changing every other day, it seems, but my plan is I'm hitting up Wale Mania on Thursday night. I get in a few hours. Actually, I get in like 2 hours, I think, before Wale Mania. I've not been to one of them before. I've heard good things about it. I believe this is Wale Mania 3. I'll be at WrestleCon Friday morning for the Fight TV stuff. Then I got to haul my ass over to Progress. I have a ticket to the Progress show at noon. And that'll be my first time at a Progress event. I think Pete Dunne is on the show. I've become a big Pete Dunne fan. I think Matt Riddle is on that show as well. So I'll be at the Hall of Fame that night after not doing it last year. I figured, you know, once they announce Kurt Angle, it's like, come on, it's Kurt Angle. How can I not be there? I actually think this is a really strong Hall of Fame class this year with Angle and DDP and Rick Rude going in, so, and the Rock and Roll Express. So I'm looking forward to that. So my plan then is to record Sound Off 489. We're going to do it on Saturday. We have a studio already reserved. I'll have Noah Mark and Brian Blade with me. We'll be doing WrestleMania predictions next weekend. I don't know if we'll be able to take phone calls the way we did when we did our show at SummerSlam or SummerSlam weekend when we were in the SiriusXM studios, but we may try. So that'll be Saturday, and then once that show is done, we'll just, you know, I'm just going to get it up. I'm not going to wait until Sunday morning. Saturday night is the NXT TakeOver show, and we will be there. Sunday morning, as you all know, 11 a.m. is our Sound Off meetup at Tin Roof Orlando, 11 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. We have the patio area reserved just for us. So when you walk in, if you don't see it, just mention that you're there for the meetup. You can mention my name and they will show you the way. I know the weather in Florida apparently has been like 90 every single day. So I don't know. I don't know what it'll be like that day. Just wear sunscreen would be my advice. If we have to go indoors, we certainly can. But we have our own area reserved, so I'm looking forward to seeing everybody there. Please, if you have not already done so, check out the Facebook invite for all the information, the address, and you can RSVP there as well. When that ends, and the reason I'm doing a hard stop at around 2:30 or so is because I'm part of a group that's taking up a party bus to the stadium. You know, it's like I'm being kidnapped and taken on a party bus, but is it really a kidnapping if I paid to be on this thing? It's funny because, like, a bunch of us paid for this party bus. It was someone's idea, and we did it last year in Dallas. And so from wherever we were, we took this bus to the Cowboys Stadium, and we were probably on the bus for a good, like, half hour or so. And it was a lot of fun, and I guess someone said, hey, we should do it again this year. But this year, I think the stadium is only, like, I think it's like a 10-minute drive from where our meetup is going to be. Which is kind of weird that we're doing this for a 10-minute drive, but my suggestion is we'll just tell the driver to drive really slow. That's all. So then it's on to Camping World Stadium for WrestleMania, another terrible stadium name. Not the worst, but not good either. And so the epidemic of bad stadium names continues. I am planning on doing a Sound Off Extra review for WrestleMania on YouTube. I'll do that Monday morning, so don't expect that overnight. I'll do that Monday morning. I'll push it out probably by midday Monday. That should be up. I may push this one out to the feed as well for everybody else, but if I do that, it's going to be a day or two delay. So I still encourage everybody to go on the YouTube channel and check it out. And don't forget, every time I do one of these extras on YouTube, I always have to remind people, if you want to download the direct MP3, because you can't stream, you don't want to stream, YouTube is a bitch, you could go on the YouTube video, and in the video description, the link is there. So you always have the option of downloading it directly if you want to. And so this will be no different. And then Monday night it's Raw at the Amway Center, and that's always fun, the Raw after WrestleMania. Could be the best Raw of the year. You never know. So that's a packed weekend right there. Say hello if you happen to see me at any of the events, and hopefully I will see everybody at the meetup. You know, these last few weeks, I've had to talk about more wrestling-related deaths than I care to. It just feels like there's been so many of them, and we're not even a full 3 months into the year yet. This one, I just absolutely hate to talk about. I've been thinking about this a lot over the last few days, and that is the death of Jan Ross, the wife of Jim Ross. 55 years old, beloved in wrestling. Anybody who met her, knew her, conversed with her, has had nothing but glowing things to say about her. And as I'm sure you've all heard by now, on Monday night, she was riding her Vespa scooter home from the gym. I see most reports have it that she was going to the gym. I mean, Jim Ross in his own blog on Tuesday, I think, said that she was coming home. So I'm more inclined to believe him than these other reports, but according to the Norman, Oklahoma Police Department, and there was a story on the Norman Transcript website, so I pulled some information directly from there, and she was struck from behind by a 2000 Mercury Grand Marquis. It was being driven by a 17-year-old kid named Nathan Farrell, and both vehicles caught fire. She was thrown from the scooter. She was not wearing a helmet. She suffered a catastrophic brain injury. She suffered multiple skull fractures. She was rushed into surgery in critical condition. They had to put her in a medically induced coma. She was on life support, just an awful situation. And unfortunately, the swelling on her brain was not subsiding, and they made the decision to take her off the machines when it became apparent that she was not going to get any better. They had a priest come in and read her last rites, and she passed away shortly thereafter. Just absolutely heartbreaking. I mean, there's no other word for it. She was a flight attendant for many years. I mean, if you don't know the story of how the two of them met, she was a flight attendant. Ric Flair, I believe once on his podcast, because I vaguely remember listening to it, He told, and it might have been in Flair's book too, but he told a funny story about being on a plane with JR. This is back in the, you know, in the NWA or the WCW days, like early 90s. And so they're on this, this flight together, and they both meet Jen for the first time. And Flair just, it kind of jokingly, you know, he was talking about how appalled he was that she was into JR and not him. Normally, it's the other way around. Ric Flair goes on these flights and all these women, you know, they want to ride Space Mountain and all that kind of stuff. But she hit it off with JR. And so Flair was kind of joking about how appalled he was by that. So that's how they met, and they got married, I believe, the same year he came to WWE, which would have been 93. So they were married for a long time. They were married for well over 20 years, which feels like a big accomplishment these days, especially if you're in the wrestling business. She was his rock, you know, through everything he's been through over the years, all the bouts of Bell's palsy and the depression that he suffered, his dependence on Ambien, his colon surgery that almost killed him. He had that colon cancer scare. All the drama with WWE over the years, getting fired multiple times. She was always there for him. You know, she played a very big part in his barbecue sauce business. They would go to football games together. He was always tweeting up pictures at the OU games or Pittsburgh Steelers games because she grew up in Pittsburgh. She was a big Steelers fan. But they did everything together. And to have something like that happen just out of nowhere, you know, you can never be prepared for something like that. And, you know, for me personally, this story really hit me hard because more than any of the other recent deaths, you know, Friday was the 2-year anniversary of my father's car accident. And so I'm sitting here reading this story off the local Norman News website about an accident and police investigating, and you know, it just brings back a flood of bad memories, you know, of reading similar stories about my dad's accident online. You know, her not wearing a helmet and him not wearing his seatbelt. And just, you know, I remember thinking, you know, if he was, you know, would he still be here and all that kind of stuff? I'm sure JR is going to have a lot of grief about that as well. It's only natural. But, you know, if there's one lesson to come out of all this, and I'll say it about what happened to my dad too, you know, always wear your seatbelt. And if you're riding a bike, if you're riding a scooter, a motorcycle, please always wear a helmet. Helmets save lives. There's a reason that a lot of states have helmet laws. I don't know if Oklahoma is one of those states. I know here in New York they have a bicycle helmet law. There's a reason for that. But I just feel awful for JR. I really do. I mean, the good thing is that, you know, he's got millions of people that have wished him well. He's got a lot of friends. He is still making the trip to Orlando this week. He had a whole bunch of events scheduled. I think he might even be at that Wale Mania event. I'm not sure. But, you know, maybe it'll help take his mind off things, if only for a few days. But he is going to be in Orlando. He is making the trip. The other good thing is that he tweeted that his wife is an organ donor. And he said that they've already found recipients for her lungs, liver, and kidneys. And so while it's just an absolutely horrible thing that happened to her, it sounds like as a result of this, there may be several other lives that are saved because of it. So that's actually very cool to hear. But my condolences go out to JR and his family. Based off all the stories people have shared this week, she sounded like a special person, and the world lost a really good human being. Vince McMahon was in an accident himself, but he's okay. His Bentley, though, not so much. He crashed it in Stamford, about a mile away from WWE offices. This was on Tuesday. They were in town for SmackDown that night, so that's why he was there. There was a photo online of him walking around after the accident. He looked okay. A little angry, maybe, but you would be too if you wrecked your Bentley. Or if someone poured cement in your Corvette. Or if you stepped into your limousine and it exploded. I get the sense that Vince doesn't really have a lot of luck with vehicles. It's funny. Court Bauer, you know, Court Bauer from MLW. Court Bauer told the story once. This would have been back when he was working for WWE Creative, of how Vince came up to him in the parking lot. I could just visualize this. This is something that needs to be like a TV show. So he tells the story about how Vince McMahon came up to him in the parking lot outside Titan Tower one night. and challenged him to a drag race. And what the hell is the guy going to do? Is he going to say no? I mean, of course he said yes, because what else are you going to say to Vince? Boss wants a drag race, then you drag race. So they race, and he manages to catch up to Vince. I don't know what car he was driving, but he manages to catch up to Vince. And Vince McMahon's response to this is to try to run this rider off the road. He tried to kill him because he hates losing. He just couldn't stand it. I think it may be time for somebody to take the car keys away from the old man. That's just my guess. What was he now? 71? 84? Something like that? He's starting to look his age. I want to talk about this WWE Ring of Honor story because this was the big news in wrestling this week, and how appropriate. 16 years after the death of WCW, here we are talking about another potential acquisition of a competitor for WWE, although I don't think that there's any real chance that this one happens. It does make for a nice story, though. Ryan Satin broke the story on Wednesday on Pro Wrestling Sheet that WWE and Sinclair Broadcast Group have discussed a potential buyout of Ring of Honor. Sources say the two sides have been in discussion since January, although Dave Meltzer in The Observer said that there have been talks that go back as far back as August. So this is nothing new as far as there being rumors of discussions of some kind between WWE and ROH, but I guess people were speaking this week, and so the story bubbled up again, and it became a big issue. Mike Johnson of PWInsider.com says that, according to a WWE source that he was in contact with, the discussions have not been about a full takeover of the company, but about the possibility of WWE Network carrying the weekly ROH television show, which is similar to these other rumored deals that we've heard about. They haven't been made public yet, but you know, there have been rumored deals with ICW and Progress possibly coming to the network. And look, I think both promotions are going to have matches at WWE Fan Access WrestleMania weekend. Clearly, there's some relationship there. There's something going on there. And so in due time, I think we'll hear more about Progress and ICW and if their shows come to the network. So according to PW Insider, that's what the discussions have really more been about. Now, if you remember, WWE did a survey last year to gauge fan interest in paying for different tiers of the network. So the basic tier is $9.99. They wanted to know if people would be interested in paying a little bit less for, I think, a smaller package, paying $12.99 to get independent wrestling content. And they even specifically mentioned TNA and ROH. If you were interested in maybe seeing their programming on the network, would you be willing to pay more money for it? But they specifically mentioned, I remember them mentioning TNA and ROH. And the idea would be that WWE would, I guess in this case, they would license the material from Ring of Honor. They've done that before. They've worked with Ring of Honor. They did a CM Punk Best in the World DVD documentary, and there was Ring of Honor footage in there from Punk's career. They licensed that footage from Ring of Honor. And there is a lot of footage in that Ring of Honor library of current WWE stars. I mean, you look up and down the main roster, you got Seth Rollins, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, AJ Styles, Austin Aries, and there's a bunch of others. Even people down now in NXT, Roderick Strong. WWE could get a lot of use out of that footage. If they want to do DVDs for people, they're going to probably need, I mean, they don't need the footage, they can do without it, but you know, you want to paint a complete picture of someone's career, and you have somebody like Kevin Owens who made a name for himself long before he ever came to WWE. You can't just ignore, you know, the fact that Kevin Owens was a big star somewhere else for 10 or 15 years. So they really could get a lot of use out of that footage. The idea that WWE would purchase ROH outright and keep it running as a separate entity with their show airing on the network, I don't see it. I just don't see it happening. You know, there were stories about them maybe doing something similar with TNA last year, or maybe buying the TNA library when their ownership situation was in limbo. This was before Anthem stepped in. And remember hearing, you know, John Gaborik, who used to work for WWE, is still friendly with Kevin Dunn. He got a meeting. He went to Kevin Dunn and was able to get a meeting. And they had discussions about the possibility of getting the tape library, but then nothing came of it. I could definitely see them wanting to strike a deal for the footage. Even if it's not to own it, but just to license it and use it, absolutely. And Joe Koff of Ring of Honor has said that they're open to that. They've done it before. He has no problem hearing what WWE offers and then maybe working with them. I'll tell you this. I could also see them airing the Ring of Honor show on the network. I would say that that's not out of the realm of possibility either. But that's very different than WWE buying the company and then running it as a separate entity and putting the show on the network. That I don't see them doing. And you know what? I hope they don't. I hope I'm right, and I hope they don't, because I think that would be terrible for wrestling. I don't think for a second, if WWE bought Ring of Honor, that they would keep it running separately with its own creative and its own roster and all that. I think they would shut it down, they would sign a bunch of their guys, and they would make money off the tape library. Not unlike what they did with WCW. Even though they actually were planning to relaunch WCW as its own separate brand, they were going to give them the Raw time slot on Monday nights. They had all these plans in place. And then Tacoma happened with Booker T and Buff Bagwell. And then Vince got cold feet and shit canned the whole thing. The reality is, though, you know, WWE has had more success with talent that they've signed from Ring of Honor than they've had with their own homegrown talent from the Performance Center. I mean, that's why they keep plucking these guys. I mean, look, they just brought back Cassius Ohno, and you could say, well, Cassius Ohno used to be on NXT. Yeah, but where was Cassius Ohno before that? He also came from CZW and ROH. That's where he made a name for himself. You know, you look up and down. I mean, again, just point to the main roster. All I have to do is point my finger at the main roster and look at the people, other than all the part-timers like Triple H and Goldberg and Brock and The Undertaker. Look at the people who are in prime positions in that company. Now, Roman Reigns is, I guess, an original talent. It's not like they don't have any original guys, but you look at a Seth Rollins or a Dean Ambrose, and a lot of those guys, they came from the indies, and many of them came from Ring of Honor. That's just a fact. And they've had more success pushing those guys and made more money off those guys than they have most guys that they've churned out of their own system. And so to buy out ROH could actually hurt them long-term more than I think it would help them. And it's just one less option for people who don't want to sign with WWE or who WWE doesn't want to sign. A lot of those guys may end up in Ring of Honor, and they can make a pretty good living working in Ring of Honor. And so if you take that option away, that's never good for anybody. Less competition is a bad thing for the wrestling business. And I'm not just talking wrestling. That goes in life, okay? Less competition is bad. Look, I just lowered my cell phone bill. There's a lot of competition right now in the mobile phone space when you talk about Verizon and T-Mobile and AT&T and all these different companies. But, you know, I'm looking at my bill and I'm like, why am I paying this much? And over the last, you know, 12 months, I've seen my bill go down $35 because I had a call and I had a fight for it, and I had a, you know, if I didn't say anything, my bill would still be, you know, $92 a month, but now it's a lot less. So why do you think that is? Why do you think Verizon and all these companies now are bringing back unlimited data plans and they're doing all these different things and these special offers? Competition. Competition is a good thing. And for what it's worth, you know, Chuck Carroll of CBS Sports spoke with two people who he says have direct knowledge of this whole situation, and they claim that there's no story here. Now, of course, depending on who he spoke with in the company, I'm sure they didn't want this story to get out, and so that's probably the standard line. Nothing to see here. It's like the cop from South Park, right? Nothing to see here. So I would take that with a grain of salt, but, you know, you're going to hear a lot of contradictory stuff. You're going to hear a lot of different things on a lot of different websites. It's hard to know what's real and what's not. Clearly, there are discussions of some kind that have been going on for many months, and that probably are still going on. But I don't believe in the end that there will be any sale. Something for the footage, yes, very possible. ROH airing on the network, still possible. WWE buying them out, no. No. And if I'm wrong about that, then it's going to be a sad day for wrestling. Because, you know, ROH has already become something of a feeder system for WWE, like unofficially. I mean, you look at all the talent that's left, or even the talent now that's rumored to be leaving in the next few months. A lot of people have left ROH over the last 6 to 12 months, and I feel like that's a big story in itself that's kind of fallen under the radar. I've talked about it here on the show before, and I know some of the newsletters have covered it, but I still feel like that hasn't been given the proper attention that it deserves. There's been I mean, exodus is a strong word, but there's been a lot of people that have left Ring of Honor, and they've gone to TNA, they've gone to WWE. But even despite that, a wrestling business with an independent ROH, I think, is stronger than one without it. It's official. Jim Cornette will be inducting the Rock and Roll Express into the WWE Hall of Fame this Friday night. I talked about that in the mailbag last week. It was a rumor at the time, but it was a rumor that shocked the hell out of me when I heard it, and it was made official this week. Also made official, Eric Bischoff is going to be inducting Diamond Dallas Page, which makes a lot of sense because he and DDP are friends going back many, many years. Kurt Angle returns. Jim Cornette is back, and Eric Bischoff is back. This Hall of Fame is looking more interesting this year than WrestleMania. So here's the full lineup for the Hall of Fame. We have John Cena inducting Kurt Angle, Eric Bischoff inducting DDP, Jim Cornette inducting the Rock and Roll Express, Ricky Steamboat inducting Rick Rude. We have Natalya inducting Beth Phoenix. They used to be tag team partners. JBL and Ron Simmons induct Teddy Long. Dana Warrior will present the Warrior Award to Eric LeGrand. It looks like no celebrity induction this year, which tells me that it probably was going to be Shaq had he not dropped out of the match with Big Show. We also have some more legacy inductees this year. These come per the Wrestling Observer. I guess the Hall of Fame t-shirt was leaked, and so all the legacy names are on there. And so the names for this year are Judy Grable, Toots Mont, which I always love saying that name, Toots Mont, who he was Vince McMahon's senior business partner in the Capital Wrestling Corporation, which later became WWWF, which later became WWF, and then WWE, and here we are today. Ricky Dozan, one of the most famous wrestlers of all time, credited with bringing pro wrestling to Japan, or at least making it famous anyway. He was, you know, Ricky Dozan, if you've ever read about him before, he's an interesting guy, and he was stabbed to death by a member of the Yakuza. And thousands of people attended his funeral. Like this guy was, to say that this guy was a big deal is actually an understatement. That's actually understating how big of a deal he really was. So certainly a deserving name to be honored at the Hall of Fame. Farmer Burns, that's his name. He was a champion, I guess, in the late 1800s. Hey, look, we had a Hillbilly Jim, right, in WWE, so the precursor to Hillbilly Jim was Farmer Burns 100 years earlier. Luther Lindsay, June Byers, Dr. Jerry Graham, who was Vince McMahon's favorite wrestler as a kid, and Haystacks Calhoun. I know that name. Haystacks Calhoun, 600 pounds of Haystacks Calhoun. He'll be going into the Hall of Fame as a legacy inductee this year, so that is the full lineup. I'll tell you, though, you know, that main lineup, I think, is pretty strong. You've got Kurt Angle, DDP, Rock and Roll Express, Rick Rude. I mean, those alone, I think, make for a pretty strong Hall of Fame class. I still say that they're crazy for putting that many people in every single year. I really don't think you need to be putting 7 or 8 people in every single year. I just don't think you have to. If you want to have, let's say, 2 main inductees and then 1 woman and 1 tag team and maybe a manager, if you want to kind of have a breakdown like that, then that's fine. But there's a reason why the well runs dry after a while and you start to run out of big attractions. You know, if they didn't get Kurt Angle this year, what would they have done? They probably would have tried to convince Rock in Florida to come back and go into the Hall of Fame. But at some point, they're going to run out of names if they don't cut back here on the number of inductees. Monday Night Raw this past week was live here from my backyard, Brooklyn, New York. I was not at the show. And looking at this poll here, probably a good thing I wasn't at the show. Raw Twitter poll, almost 2,400 votes. Normally more votes means bad news, and it was bad news. 28% thumbs up, 72% thumbs down, a lopsided rebuke of this show. A show that really wasn't very good. I did enjoy the Samoa Joe Sami Zayn match. I enjoyed the Chris Jericho promo, and that's about it. There really wasn't anything else on the show that really stood out to me as being all that good. We all knew the moment was coming, though, the big news of this show, and that is that Mick Foley, poor Mick Foley, fired by Stephanie McMahon as the general manager of Monday Night Raw. We knew this was going to happen. We knew this from the day that he was hired. I mean, look, everyone is GM, eventually their run comes to an end. But we knew exactly how this was going down. Whether it was with a slap or a low blow, I guess Stephanie gave him the low blow the week before. But it was going to be Stephanie McMahon getting up in his face and saying, "You're fired." And that's exactly what happened here. And really, though, it's for the best. Foley tried. Foley did his best. He had his moments. He had his good weeks. He had many bad weeks. He did not have a run the likes of which he did when he was the commissioner in 2000. That was a lot more entertaining than this run was. Unfortunately, it just really doesn't matter who they plug in there as his replacement. The fact is that Stephanie is still the main character. Stephanie is still around. And so even if Kurt Angle takes his place after WrestleMania, which I expect him to, you know, we'll kind of have the honeymoon period, I think, with Kurt. And I would guess he would be a babyface GM. I don't know. He would almost have to be at first. But the fact is, you know, it's just going to end up being the same, you know, the same commissioner against GM storyline all over again. Or they'll just install a heel GM. And it's not like that hasn't been done to death either. I do think there's a lesson to be learned from the way they've done things on SmackDown with Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan. Or even William Regal on NXT, who I think his role on that show is just perfect. I wouldn't change a thing about it. He's not overbearing. He's not on every show. You know that when he speaks, he's like the voice of God on that show. He only makes an appearance when there's a decision that has to be made, and he stays out of the way. And most of the time when we hear announcements, it's not even out in front of the crowd. You know, we go back to his office. It's like Jack Tunney back in the day. That's my vision of how a GM should be if you're going to have one on the show. But I think what they've done on SmackDown with Bryan and Shane, now of course Shane is going to be involved in a match, and so he's in more segments on TV. But up until recently, we really didn't see a lot of Shane McMahon on TV. He was leaving that to Daniel Bryan. And it's not like Daniel Bryan was taking over the whole freaking show. They picked their spots with him, and I think that they've done a pretty good job as far as their roles go on SmackDown. And I think they would be well served to give the heel authority figure stuff a rest for a good 6 months and then come back to it when they actually have somebody who's worth putting in that role. Sami Zayn came out to defend Foley's honor. He came out to stand up to Stephanie, which is nice in theory, but that never ends well. And it didn't for Sami. Samoa Joe came out. She made a match between the two of them and turned out to be the second best thing on the entire show after the Jericho segment. Sami went for a Huluva kick. Joe caught him for the Uranage slam, put him in the Coquina clutch. Sami tapped. You know, one of the things that they continue to do right on this show, so for all the stuff that we point to that's wrong and it sucks and it's crap and it's boring and it's this and it's that, you got to point out the good stuff, right? So one of the things that they continue to do right, well, first, one of the things is Braun Strowman. The other one, though, is they continue to book Samoa Joe like a monster. Both of them are booked like monsters. Not all monsters look alike. Braun Strowman is what do they call him? What's their phrase for him? A monster among men or something? He is. You look at the guy, he towers over everybody. I don't know what his exact height is. He's every bit of 6'8". He's a gigantic man. He's a gigantic, scary man who can move, who's got some speed, who's agile. Joe is not tall. He's big in other ways, but he's not tall. But he just has this swagger about him when he comes out. Even Braun doesn't really have this, I don't think. Where when Joe walks out, he has what I call the BMF walk, which is what Steve Austin had. Steve Austin would come out, his head would be waving back and forth. He just had that pissed off look on his face, that snarl every time he came out. And Joe has the same thing. Joe has that kind of BMF walk and that whole pissed off, angry face. And it works. It worked for him in NXT, and it works for him here on the main roster. And aside from the fact that he has no scheduled match at WrestleMania, I have nothing but praise for what they've done so far with Samoa Joe. And even at WrestleMania, I would expect him to be there. I expect him to play a role of some kind in the Triple H Seth Rollins match, which, you know, should be a pretty high-profile role for him on the show. That's one of the top three or four matches on the card, so you know, hopefully he'll at least make an appearance or interfere or be at ringside or something. But I'm very happy with what they've done with him so far. They interviewed Kevin Wilt I believe his name was. He's been assisting Seth Rollins in Birmingham with his rehab. So they went live via satellite to the rehab center. He said Seth re-aggravated his knee injury last week in the attack by Triple H. But what saved him from serious injury was the brace that he was wearing. And despite that, he said it would be several months before he could compete. No doctor would clear him, he said, for WrestleMania. Charlotte pinned Dana Brooke in a 3-minute match. You know, it takes a lot to have a match this bad in 3 minutes, but they managed to pull it off. And my only hope from this, it was short, it was to the point, right? They got Dana out of there, Charlotte got a dominant win. Great. Hopefully, this is the end of the Dana Brooke experiment. She never should have been called up from NXT in the first place. What they should have done is kept her down there and gave her more time to improve and get better instead of rushing her up. She's an example of somebody who they rushed up far too soon. And maybe she would have, you know, picked it up a lot quicker, and maybe by now she'd be a lot better than she is. Maybe not. Maybe now she'll have that chance. And I'm not saying she's going to be sent back down, but called up way too soon. And when you do that and somebody isn't ready and they have a lot of, you know, faux pas and they mess up a lot, and, you know, it's hard when you make a first impression. And your first impression is that, oh, she botches all the time. Look at Dana Brooke is terrible. Like, you know how many people say that? And look, I'm not going to sit here and say she doesn't botch and that she's not exactly technically sound when she's in there and sometimes look like she's got two left feet, because she does sometimes. I'm sure she tries very hard and she's got a unique look. Her look is not the problem. But I kind of feel bad for her, because you get rushed into that situation. I'm sure you're all happy. Oh, great. I got the call, right? I'm going up to the main roster. This is awesome. And part of it also is Emma got hurt. And so who knows what would have happened if Emma didn't get hurt and they kept their pairing together from NXT. I mean, it doesn't change the fact that she still got called up too soon, but it was just the whole series of things that happened, and she got thrust into this position. And when you put her in the ring with people like Sasha and Charlotte and Becky and people who have a lot more experience than she does. And Charlotte, in a way, is just a freak. It's not like Charlotte has that much more experience, but Charlotte is unique. I mean, she picked this up like nothing, and it's in her blood. It's in her genes, right? It's in her DNA. So, but, you know, Becky and Charlotte and Sasha and them have years of experience, and they wrestled on the indies and all that stuff that Dana Brooke, I don't think, did. And my hope is that this is kind of the send-off for her, and they do send her back down, and maybe in a year from now or something, if they try again with her, maybe she'll be better off for it. But what they're doing now, it ain't working. It's just not working. Chris Jericho came out to introduce us to the real Kevin Owens. He showed us a picture of Owens as a teenager in his bedroom doing the Jericho pose with the arms outstretched. He was wearing a Y2J shirt. He had a Jericho poster on the wall on one side. He had a poster of a girl in a bikini on the other side. And Jericho said he looked like a fan of Jericho. He was marking out, man. I wonder if Vince will take Jericho off Raw for that comment, the way he took Matt Stryker off SmackDown after the Royal Rumble that one year. Then he showed a private DM conversation on Twitter that he had with Owens in 2014. He's breaking Twitter etiquette here. You don't show DMs publicly, dude. You don't do that. But there they were. The legit DMs, I guess, were up on the TitanTron. This is when Owens first came to the company. He had reached out to Jericho for advice. He wanted to make sure he didn't piss people off. And he said, you know, what's the thing I could do to avoid pissing people off? The answer, by the way, is nothing. I don't think there's anything you could do. You're always going to piss somebody off. But Jericho told him, hey, just be yourself. They signed you for a reason, just be yourself. And I thought this was really good stuff. You know, it added some more depth to the story. Yeah, it's one thing to put the two of them together all those months ago and, oh, we're best friends and all this. But this actually shows that there's a legitimate history here between these two guys that dates back many years. The fans here were reacting to Jericho like he was the Rock. I mean, they're chanting all of his catchphrases. They're chanting his name. We're still in the, in kind of the honeymoon babyface phase for Chris Jericho. And he should be fine, because my understanding is that after WrestleMania, he's going to be gone for a while. It might just be a couple of months. I think the best thing for Jericho, honestly, is probably to go away and then come back. Not go away for like 6 months, but, you know, go away for a month or two and then come back. It's kind of the law of diminishing returns. I feel like when this feud plays itself out, how much longer is Jericho really going to be able to sustain this type of babyface popularity? Because I think Jericho is at his best when he's a heel. And I feel like as a babyface, there's a short shelf life for this. So him going away for a couple of months probably is the best thing possible. But Samoa Joe started to walk out. That distracted Jericho long enough for Owens to attack from behind. He gave Jericho the pop-up powerbomb. He got roundly booed for that. None of this, hey, let's cheer the heel bullshit. They actually booed this man. Then he tore up the list of Jericho, which got him even more boos. He put some of it in his mouth. He started chewing it up. He spit it out. You know how many cities that Jericho has carried that list around in? You know how unsanitary that is? Come on, man. Then again, I suppose Jericho's list is far from the most unsanitary prop that they've used in WWE these last few weeks that we've seen. I wouldn't be putting any of that stuff anywhere near my mouth. We don't know where it's been. Speaking of Jericho, I want to mention this. He had Bob Barker on his podcast this week. I was very excited to listen to that. And I listened to it. It's over an hour long. It's a really good interview. Bob is now 93 years old and still very lucid for his 93 years. He tells some great stories, but the saddest thing about this whole thing was at the end of the interview, Jericho finally brings up the Price is Raw, right? Because that was the whole big thing, was it 7 or 8 years ago now probably, when they had Bob Barker as the guest host that one time for Raw, and he was the best guest host they ever had. He even won a Slammy Award for it. But he did The Price is Raw, and he had Santino as a contestant, and IRS, and Jericho. And this was when Jericho was just, you know, he's a heel, and he walks out there with this just pissed off look on his face, like, I can't believe I'm part of this nonsense. And he has the name tag. The name tag is like stuck to his chest that has all the baby oil on it. And Bob Barker was just fantastic in that segment. So they don't bring that up until the very end. And Jericho brings it up, and Bob kind of gives away the fact that up to that point of the interview, he had no idea that he was talking to Chris Jericho. He had no idea that the person that he had been talking to for like an hour before that was the person that he worked with in that segment on Raw. It's like, I could just picture in my head how, like, the deflated look that must have come over Jericho's face when he realized that Bob had no idea who he was until he mentioned that. Now, to be fair to Bob, you know, again, I thought he sounded sharp for the rest of the interview. It's not like he sounded lost or it's like, oh man, he's so old, he doesn't know. Like, no, he sounded fine. I'm guessing, this is my guess here. Somebody from Podcast One or somebody from Jericho's show reached out to Bob or reached out to Bob's assistant to set the interview up, and nobody bothered to tell him that, hey, the person that you're going to be talking to is the guy that you worked with in that one random segment on that wrestling show, you know, 8 years ago. Because in that case, you know, one could understand that this guy maybe didn't know who he was. But it was still, I still felt a little embarrassed for Jericho when that happened. But it's a good interview. You still should go back and check it out. They gave us a great example on the show of exactly what is wrong with the cruiserweight division. We got a 90-second match. And I put that word, by the way, in air quotes, okay? Match. Between Brian Kendrick and TJ Perkins. First of all, nobody gets over in 90 seconds. Unless your name is Bill Goldberg. That's about it. You can't really do anything in 90 seconds. So then after the match, Kendrick said, Akira Tozawa is out of the country and he can't get back in because to get in, you need a passport. And he pulls out Tozawa's passport out of his jacket pocket, which he stole from him. Yes, the storyline is that Brian Kendrick stole Akira Tozawa's passport. This is the kind of dumb bullshit. This and the 90-second matches that illustrates the difference between what made the Cruiserweight Classic so much fun and what Vince McMahon's vision of the Cruiserweight division is. his vision of the cruiserweight division is really no different from his vision of everything else. And so the cruiserweight division just becomes like everything else, which is exactly what the cruiserweight division should not be. And this segment certainly didn't do anything to get me interested to watch 205 Live the next night. If that's the other goal of all these segments on Raw, is to get you to want to watch 205 Live on the network, fail. I was just talking about Bob Barker. I wish I had the fail horn. I'd play it right now. Nia Jax has officially been added to the women's title match at WrestleMania, making it a fatal four-way. She beat Bayley in a no-DQ non-title match to qualify. The best thing I can say about this, it wasn't a good match. The best thing I can say is that if the champion had to lose, and we've seen that quite a bit lately, we've seen the champion losing, at least the winner, at least the person that beat her, gets a title shot out of it, and it's not for nothing. She beat her with a Samoan drop in a match that the fans did not really care about at all. They were distracted by something that was happening outside the ring. I don't know if somebody got kicked out. I don't know what happened. They showed Charlotte backstage watching the match on a monitor. The most ridiculous thing that you've ever seen. Her entire body was facing us, the viewer, while her head was turned towards the screen. Her head was in a different zip code than the rest of her body. Nobody watches television that way. If they do, they need to have their television privileges revoked. But they keep doing it. No matter how ridiculous it looks. We're on TV. This is how we have to do that. No, you don't. No, you don't. They should look normal. Like a normal human being. Not like The Exorcist. I feel like her head's going to start spinning. She looks so ridiculous. At least Sasha, when they showed Sasha, she looked a little more normal. But Charlotte, it's just, if that doesn't end up in the next Botchamania video, then somebody needs to send Matthew a message, because that's just horrendous. Triple H did a sit-down interview in the ring with Michael Cole. Fans chanted CM Punk. He said Rollins listens to the roar of the crowd too much, and that's why he's on the shelf missing his second WrestleMania in a row. Just like Mick Foley, if you look at Mick Foley's potato chip of an ear. It was all the fans' fault for encouraging him to do all the crazy stunts that he did throughout his entire career. He said he's officially done with Seth Rollins. He handed Michael Cole an envelope with tickets to, I guess, give to Rollins for WrestleMania. It's up in the nosebleeds, but he said if he wants to go to WrestleMania, that's the only way he's going to be able to. And he went to leave, and then he stopped. He stopped himself, and he went to grab the tickets back. And he said, yeah, I'm wondering if maybe there is a way for Seth and I to fight at WrestleMania. And he proposed signing a hold harmless agreement for a non-sanctioned match at WrestleMania. So, if Triple H maims and cripples the guy, he and the company cannot be held responsible. Rollins cannot turn around and sue the company. So he said he'll have the paperwork drawn up, and he challenged Seth Rollins to show up next week. So, let's recap what we've seen so far. Triple H turns on Seth Rollins last August. By the way, that was the peak of this feud. The peak was at the very beginning. So he turns on him last August. Rollins whines about it for months and months while Triple H checks into the Witness Protection Program. Okay, we don't see him on TV for months. He suddenly reemerges when football season ends, and he cuts a babyface promo. He goes out there, he speaks the truth about Rollins, and he talks about wanting to groom the next generation of stars in NXT, and I really don't want to have to do this, but you're making me. It was a total babyface promo. And it got a big babyface reaction from the crowd. Then Rollins gets hurt again. Then Rollins comes back, only for Triple H to re-injure him with his own crutch. And then, it's Triple H, not Seth Rollins. Triple H challenges him to a match at WrestleMania. 30 seconds after saying he's done with the guy. He has a change of heart. And he says, you know what, on second thought, I really want to kick your ass some more at WrestleMania. So show up next week, you coward. Do I have that right? More or less? I just want to make sure I have that sequence of events right. This is a hell of a build-up here to this match. They kept the New Day limited to one backstage segment on the show, although they did give a little wink to all the Paige stuff. Kofi and Big E looked at Woods, and then Big E just went, "Do you have something you want to tell us?" And then Woods just went into his normal spiel promoting WrestleMania. I say give it a week or two. Nobody's even going to be talking about that story anymore. Main event was a match between Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns. Not nearly as good as their match at Fastlane. Strowman brought the ring steps into the ring. He went to use them, but Roman hit the Superman punch. Reigns went for another Superman punch, but Strowman caught him. Reigns hit him with the punch anyway. So he's setting up for the spear in the corner when we hear the gong. And people lose their minds. Lights go out. When they come back on, The Undertaker is in the ring. And he stood there for a while, looking very tanned. He stood there for a while before turning to Braun Strowman. He gave Braun Strowman a chokeslam. And then The Undertaker grimaced as though he realized, oh shit, I shouldn't have turned my back on this guy. And sure enough, he turns around and walks right into a spear from Roman Reigns. I don't doubt that Undertaker is probably, his whole body is probably racked in pain, but I don't think that's where the grim, I think the grimace was part of the plan. I think he winced and made that kind of expression because the idea was, oh shit, I took my attention away from Roman, and I think that whole thing was planned. But, anyway, Roman walks off and Undertaker does the zombie sit-up to end the show. And we never did get a decision in the match, so I guess it's a no contest. But this was paint by number stuff as far as The Undertaker goes, which brings me to a bigger point I want to get off my chest here. If this really is The Undertaker's last match, and nobody knows. Anybody who tells you they know that it's his last match, they're lying because they don't know. We go through this every single year. I doubt The Undertaker knows. The Undertaker may have it in his head, yeah, this is it. This is it for me. But I'm sure he's thought that before. He probably thought that last year. And in the end, whether it's the money, whether it's just the chance to go out there in front of 80,000 people, whatever it is, he keeps coming back. So who knows for sure if this is it for him. But I will say that more than any other year in recent memory, this really feels like the end to me. There's been a lot of chatter. You just look at the guy. Just all, everything just tells me that I think this may be it. I really think that this is the closest we've been to the end. You know, but again, you never know. Vince thought that his match in New Orleans with Brock was going to be it. That's why he had him lose to Lesnar. If Vince didn't think that that was going to be The Undertaker's last match, I don't think the streak would have ended. And that was 3 years ago. So again, I'm just saying, we don't know. But let's say it is, right? Let's say that this is it for The Undertaker. That I'm right, you're right, a lot of people that have been saying that. Let's say we're all right and this is it. They have really dropped the ball on this whole thing. Now, they lost something big when they had Lesnar end the streak. I would not have ended the streak. They made the most of it. They turned Brock into an even bigger monster, so I give them kudos for that. I would not have ended the streak, but they did, right? You can't put the genie back in the bottle. What's done is done. So with the streak gone, you ask yourself, well, if The Undertaker is still going to wrestle, what is the next logical attraction other than just, hey, it's The Undertaker? Like, what is the attraction here, right? The attraction, as I see it, is Undertaker's last ride. His final match. And with each appearance now, let's be honest here, he's looking more and more his age. He's slower. He's a little hunched over when he stands up. Father time and injuries, right? It eventually catches up to all these guys. But more so Undertaker. I mean, think of the wars that this guy has been in over the years. I think back to that flak jacket story that Triple H told once when Undertaker had broken ribs. This would have been back in the mid-90s. You know how many times Undertaker probably did that? Taped up an injury and went out there and wrestled. I mean, I guess guys back in the day did that all the time, but especially Undertaker. Like, he did it with Batista. He did it with a bicep tear after WrestleMania 23. He beat Batista. He became the world champion. Had a hell of a match with Batista too, by the way. I would say best match on the show. And so after WrestleMania that year, he had a cage match with Batista on SmackDown. It was the night that Edge came to SmackDown and cashed in Money in the Bank and won the world title. Undertaker went into that match with his arm all wrapped up with a bicep tear. And what did he do? Again, he taped it up and he went out there. So I have all the respect in the world for The Undertaker. I will miss him when he is retired for good. I'll feel happy for him because then he'll get to just go, you know, enjoy the fruits of his labor and hopefully get his body all fixed up. But I'm gonna miss him. I'm gonna miss the entrance, the music, because there's nothing else like it. Look, I've been to 5 WrestleManias now. This will be number 6 coming up. There's nothing like an Undertaker entrance live at WrestleMania. But I'm sitting here the other day, and I find myself listening to that Shaman's Harvest song from the new WWE Uncaged album that dropped on Spotify this week. It was the song they used in the promo video for the Undertaker Bray Wyatt match at WrestleMania 31. Great song. Everybody should go listen to it. Go download it. It's probably on YouTube too. But I'm listening to the song. I'm just listening to it. And it just got me thinking about the promotion of this year's match and how lazy it is. That's really the best word for it. It is a lazy promotion for an Undertaker match. When Roman Reigns eliminated The Undertaker at the Royal Rumble, right, that was the whole catalyst for this feud, or so we thought. Undertaker wanted to punch his ticket to WrestleMania, I'm going to be in the Royal Rumble, and then Roman Reigns took that away from him. And yet, there has been very little mention of that at all. There might have been a fleeting mention once by Michael Cole about him eliminating Undertaker from the Royal Rumble. It hasn't been focused on. It hasn't really been mentioned all that much. In fact, when Undertaker showed up a couple of weeks ago to confront Braun Strowman, remember they had that face-to-face and everyone's like, oh, they chanted, this is awesome. It was like a good moment and then Strowman backed down. What happened when Strowman backed down and left the arena? Undertaker went to go leave the ring. He wasn't even there to call out Roman Reigns. But Roman came out anyway. He said, hey, Strowman called me out. He didn't call you out, dead man. And then Undertaker chokeslammed him. And it's like, oh, we're on the road to WrestleMania. I'm like, it's just, you know, from there, it's just followed the usual pattern we get every single year. We hear the gong, the lights go out, out comes The Undertaker. He looks up at the WrestleMania sign, rolls his eyes in the back of his head, and then maybe he hits a chokeslam and he leaves. And that's all well and good, and the people eat it up because, you know, it's The Undertaker. But if this is it for him, if they even think that this could be it for him, what a lazy way to book an Undertaker match for WrestleMania. The time has come. The time has come for The Undertaker to take that last ride. I'm looking at him now. I'm looking at him ever since the Royal Rumble. The time has come. You know, I mean, this should be it. They need to look and say, look, it's time. Huddle together with him and come up with a plan to promote his final match so that people know going into it that this year is their last chance to see The Undertaker. And have him go out there on TV and talk about this being his last ride. Talk about the wars that he's put his body through. Let him open up a little bit. Humanize him just a little bit. I get it that, you know, he's the dead man, right? You don't want to humanize him too much. You know, I know people love to talk about all the ghouls and goblins and souls and shit, but it's okay to let him be a little more real out there. He can talk. We know he can talk. I mean, he doesn't have to go full American Badass or Big Evil. But I want to hear from him. And if he goes out there and he says, you know, Orlando is my final destination, and if I'm going down, I'm taking you to hell with me, or something like that. And then you could put together the great video package of highlights of Undertaker throughout all the years, all the different versions, Gray Glove Undertaker, Purple Glove Undertaker, Teardrop Undertaker, Ministry Undertaker. You know, they can gloss over those 3 years in the middle if they want to. Really get people invested in this match and just tell them straight up going in, this is The Undertaker's last match at WrestleMania. Even if this isn't the match you wanted to see him in, even if you aren't necessarily excited for the match itself, or you hate Roman Reigns, this is your last chance. Is he going to go out with a win, or is he going to pass the torch? I mean, I had a similar idea for him and Sting a few years ago where they would do the double retirement match, where you know going in, this is it for both of them, but the draw is then who wins. I mean, if it's Undertaker's last match and it's Sting's last match, well, surely you can't have them lose, right? If it's Sting's only match in WWE, surely you can't have him lose. And then in the end, he would lose. I would have Undertaker go over in that match. But that was my idea for the two of them. You know, one has to win, one has to lose. What's going to give? But they did Sting and Triple H instead. And looking back, it would have been better off for Sting if he did retire after that show. But, I mean, who knew what would happen to him? I think it sucks that his career had to end the way that it did. And you know what? It's too bad, too, because Undertaker, as awful as I thought he looked in New Orleans at WrestleMania 30, I thought he actually looked really good at WrestleMania 31. I thought just physically and the way he was moving around, it was a big improvement. And I think him and Sting probably could have put on a decent match, but it is what it is. I'm just begging for an interesting build to an Undertaker match at WrestleMania instead of the same old shit. This, to me, just feels thrown together. Roman Reigns feels like just the next face that they plug into this pre-existing template that they have for these Undertaker matches. And it just screams lazy to me. They have a creative team. It'd be kind of cool if they actually had the chance to show off some of that creativity every now and then. We know they have it in them. We've seen it with the build to the Owens and Jericho feud, or Randy Orton, the whole Wyatt family storyline up to this point. But this is the Undertaker. This ain't no Joe Schmo here. And I think he deserves better than this. The SmackDown review this week is brought to you by Mania Crawl 4. Mania Crawl coming to Orlando, WrestleMania weekend. We did partner with them for our SummerSlam meetup last year. Had a lot of fun. And the Crawl this year is going to split time between three different bars on Wall Street Plaza in Orlando, Sunday, April 2nd, starting at 11:30 a.m. You can go to maniacrawl.com for more details. Use the Lyft code CRAWL4. That's CRAWL and the number 4 if you are in the area. SmackDown this week, we had over 1,300 votes in our poll. 84% thumbs up, 16% thumbs down. It's quite the opposite of what we had for Raw Monday night. David Otunga was back because they went back to the two-man booth last week. I guess they had a panic attack, so they had to get him back out there ASAP. Mauro Ranallo was MIA again. We were told he was out sick. And according to this week's Observer, it does indeed sound like he is dealing with a bad bout of depression, which may or may not stem from his bipolar disorder. He finally broke his Twitter silence on Thursday. He said, "I am deeply touched by your tweets of support. My doctor wants me to stay off social media for now, but I wanted to thank you." Hopefully he puts his health first. He does what's best for him. He gets well. I think it would be nice to see him get to call his first WrestleMania, but health comes first. The Usos beat American Alpha to become three-time tag team champions in a very good match. I really like this match a lot. Probably was the best match on WWE television all week. Jason Jordan got the hot tag, which is always great. Got a near fall with an angle slam. Gable tagged in. He almost got rolled up, but he kicked out. And when he got up, he immediately ate a super kick of death by one of the Usos. And then the other Uso immediately hit a Superfly splash, or I guess a Samoan splash, off the top rope. Great near fall. I thought it was over. The people in the building thought it was over. It wasn't. Crowd thought we had new champs. There was another close near fall after this when Alpha hit the Steiner Brothers top rope bulldog on one of the Usos, and Jordan got yanked out of the ring just at the last second before the referee could count three. Big brawl outside the ring. Gable even did a moonsault, I believe, off the top rope. He ends up getting tossed into the crowd, over the barricade and into the crowd. So Gable is out of the picture. Or I guess into the universe, as Tom Phillips said. Do they realize how stupid that sounds? Like, they have to know, right? They have to know how ridiculous that sounds. He tossed him into the universe. I guess some say he's still floating around. Jordan got crotched on the ropes. He tried to climb back into the ring, and one of the Usos grabbed the rope and crotched him, and the other Uso nailed him with a super kick, and that was enough for the win. So the Usos are your new SmackDown Tag Team Champions. Hot finish to just an excellent match. It's interesting how Jordan and Gable, were noticeably getting boos from the crowd, and the Usos were getting cheers. So Jordan and Gable were still being cheered more than booed, but it was just interesting to see that dynamic at play here, because I haven't really heard them get booed. I've heard them get some just non-reactions. The buzz that was around them in NXT just isn't there anymore. But I've not heard them get booed before, so I don't know if that's the start of something new. I don't know. And I saw Roman Reigns on Twitter congratulating his cousins on their big win. You know, if they just followed the same blueprint with Roman that they did with the Usos, he would be the heel who eventually starts to get cheered, just like the Usos are. Starts to get cheered naturally, not because they tell you to cheer for him. And then Vince would have exactly what he wants, but he's very stubborn. On Talking Smack, the Usos asked for a match with the Bullet Club at WrestleMania. Oops. I assume they meant the club. Although Usos against Bullet Club would be okay with me too. This is how you know Vince doesn't watch Talking Smack. It's things like this. As if what Daniel Bryan says every week isn't enough evidence of that, you can add this to the list of evidence that Vince does not pay attention to Talking Smack. Throughout this show, they showed us what was purported to be unseen footage from this past season of Total Bellas, which turned out to be a series of skits with Miz and Maryse dressed up as John Cena and Nikki Bella. And you know, it's not often that WWE does comedy like this and hits the mark, actually gets me to laugh out loud. So I want to make sure I give them their just due here, because this was actually funny. Like, legitimately funny. They filmed it from what we were told was John Cena's house, his mansion, which looked like it could pass for John Cena's house. It was very nice. Maryse was actually playing Nikki and Brie. They would cut back and forth. They had her made up to play both parts. And she would just randomly start yelling Brie mode, you know, like her crappy theme song. Miz showed up dressed as a 17-year-old man-child, so he pretty much had the Cena look nailed down. He spoke in a very robotic voice, because you see, John Cena is a robot, incapable of expressing real emotion. He said Nikki was breaking the rules of the house by having her feet up on the patio table, and they did a series of teases designed to make Nikki think that John was about to propose marriage to her. First he said, "I'm going to pop the question," and Nikki got all excited. She's like, "Oh, this is great." And then he just literally popped a balloon that had the word question written on it. Later on, he said, "I want to give you a diamond Dallas Page yoga DVD." And he gave her a DDP yoga. I thought that was fantastic. That was actually very clever. Whoever came up with that was great. Then he said he wanted to give her a ring, which turned out to be a toy wrestling ring. The part that made me laugh out loud was when he got down on one knee. He's like, "I'm going to tie the knot." And then instead he just reaches down and ties his sneaker. I lost it. I started laughing. How could you hate that? I know there were people who absolutely hated this. I mean, to each their own, but like, how could you hate this? This was comedy done right. We've seen so many examples in this company of comedy that just goes horribly, horribly wrong. I mean, honestly, they've had so few hits, like real hits on the comedy over the last several years that I think back to the last legitimately funny thing I've seen them do, and I go all the way back to the Tea Time segment with Santino and Sheamus, and that was probably like 2009. Now, I'm sure there must have been some stuff in between, like maybe some of the stuff Rock did to build to the first match with Cena at WrestleMania. I think he had that one skit with the kid in his house. That was kind of funny, but like, there's, you know, the examples are few and far between. I'd have to really sit and work hard to think about that. So when they do comedy and it actually makes me laugh, it stands out to me. And these segments are going to stand out to me for a while, because I thought these were great. I think the build-up to this match has just overachieved. I didn't expect to be as interested in this match going into Mania as I am. Cena, for his part, him and Nikki were on Talking Smack, and John Cena cut a hell of a promo on The Miz. Wasn't about comedy, which is good, because when John Cena does comedy, normally it sucks. But when John Cena gets serious, more often than not, he knocks it out of the park. And so credit to everybody involved here. I didn't think that it would be possible to get me interested in a John Cena-Miz match at WrestleMania, but somehow they've pulled it off. Randy Orton beat Baron Corbin with an RKO when Dean Ambrose appeared on a forklift and distracted Corbin. After the match, Ambrose accepted his challenge to an Intercontinental title match at WrestleMania, so now all we need is an Usos Alpha rematch for the tag team titles, and we'll have those 14 matches that I talked about last week. Backstage after the match, Renee Young was interviewing Orton when the lights went out, and when they came back on, there were a bunch of dudes in sheep masks surrounding Orton. They beat him down, they held him for Bray Wyatt. Wyatt had, now this was very weird. So Bray Wyatt enters the picture, and he's got this sign, I guess, with a giant X. I don't know what the hell that was, but he placed it down by Orton's crotch. And at that point, I didn't like where this was going. He told Orton, "You exposed my one flaw, but that flaw has now become my greatest strength." And then he sang to Orton. This sucked. There's no other way to put it. This sucked. And that's a problem. When this is your WWE Championship match going into WrestleMania, you should not be having segments on the show that suck. We had a Lance Catamaran against Cheddarfield match. Tyler Breeze came out with Fandango in drag, dressed up like Nikki Bella. He called himself Breezy Bella. And for everybody who was very upset about this and messaged me, you know, my thoughts in the past on Tyler Breeze. I used to be a big fan, and oh, I can't wait for Solomonster's thoughts on this. He's not going to like this. And a lot of people very angry about what Tyler Breeze did here on this show. I don't know what you're so upset about. You can't kill something if it's already dead. So that's all I have to say about that. Cena made short work of Fandango. Breeze tried to interfere, but he got speared by Nikki Bella. Nikki Bella busted herself open. How did she bust herself open? She busted herself open on a bust because Tyler Breeze had fake boobies as part of his outfit, and she, the way she speared him, I guess, she went headfirst right into his boobies and somehow cut herself open. So hopefully Cena understands that it's not Tyler Breeze's fault. He didn't bust his girlfriend open on purpose, because we all know if you get on Cena's bad side, it ain't going to be good for your career. So hopefully he understands that. But anyway, so she speared him down, and Cena and Nikki then gave stereo finishes. AA to Fandango, Rack Attack 2.0 to Tyler Breeze. They both applied their STFs, and yes, Tyler Breeze tapped out to Nikki Bella. Well, you know, there's always Southpaw Regional Wrestling for Tyler Breeze. I think that might be his best option at this point. Carmella beat Becky Lynch by DQ when Natty, who was on commentary, ran in and nailed Carmella with a clothesline. This was just an excuse to do a giant brawl with all the women in the SmackDown title match at WrestleMania. Mickie James ran down. Alexa Bliss ran down. She was the last woman standing at all at the end of all this. Squared Circle Sirens, I want to give them credit. They had the scoop that former Ring of Honor star Veda Scott was backstage at the tapings on Tuesday. She asked for her release from Ring of Honor back in December. Yet another ROH defection. You could add that to the list of the ones I've been talking about. No word on why she was there. She may have just been visiting, but WWE is moving ahead with plans for an all-women's tournament, similar to what they've done with the Cruiserweights and the UK guys. I think that is going to be starting in May, if I'm not mistaken. So I think she'd be a good fit for it. AJ Styles and Shane McMahon continued their build for WrestleMania. AJ is, in fact, not fired. He opened the show cutting a promo promising to meet Shane in the parking lot again, because our commissioner here, for the second week in a row, couldn't be bothered to show up to his own show on time. So AJ was back there the entire show. He's just waiting for Shane to pull up, but he never did. Instead, Shane, I guess, snuck in through the back door or something, because there he was at the end of the show, walking to the ring. He had a black eye from last week's attack. He said AJ should have just come to him man-to-man instead of attacking him from behind. Renee Young told AJ, "Hey, Shane's in the ring, so you might want to go out there." And so out to the ring came AJ. He told Shane to calm down. He says, "I admit, I crossed the line last week. I apologize." So there he was, you know, he's buttering up Shane after beating the snot out of him last week. But as soon as he stepped into the ring, Shane attacked him and began peppering him with some of the most god-awful punches that you will ever see. These were almost as bad as those phantom punches he gave to Randy Orton all those years ago, where it looked like Orton had like an invisible force field around him. And Styles, this was even worse. AJ had a sell for him. So he's punching him in the most horrific way, and AJ is selling the hell out of it, which made it even more embarrassing. They spilled out to the floor. AJ suplexed Shane into the barricade, and so now he's going for the Styles Clash. Shane backdrops him onto the floor. Shane clears off the announce table. He lays AJ on the announce desk, gets into the ring, goes up to the top rope, and off he comes with the diving giant elbow through the table. Think about this. I figured they're going to save that spot for the match at WrestleMania, but they blew that spot off here on TV. What the hell does Shane have up his sleeve for WrestleMania? It's pretty scary to think about. So they've got one show left. I still say they have to add a no DQ or a street fight stipulation to this or something. Well, I guess they're the same thing. But they really have to, because this should not be a straight wrestling match. They should be allowed to use whatever gimmicks they can get their hands on and brawl all over the ring without the threat of being counted out. And so I suspect that we'll get that stipulation added on TV this week. Crowd chanted, holy shit. It was a hot way to end the show. Shane's a madman. Save for those horrendous punches, I like the rest of this, but those punches were just, oof, woof. On the subject of Shane McMahon and AJ Styles, this is going to get a lot of people upset, sad, I guess, maybe. Shawn Michaels was on Sam Roberts' podcast, and he dropped some news that WWE came to him and offered him a match against AJ Styles at this year's WrestleMania. And he turned it down. And that is how we ended up with Shane McMahon as AJ's opponent. Now, I had proposed that match as like a fantasy-type match for the Royal Rumble when they were in San Antonio. I first pitched the idea of doing Shawn and AJ about a week or two after they announced, I think in September, that they were coming to the Alamo Dome. And it just kind of on, you know, it ended up on a few websites as news. It was just an idea that I had pitched, and then it kind of blew up into this whole thing. And now everyone started talking about, ooh, Shane and AJ, to the point that Shane, AJ and Shawn, to the point that AJ was asked about it in interviews. And he said, well, I haven't heard anything about that, but I would love to wrestle, you know, Shawn. Of course, anybody would love to. But that was what I had pitched all those months ago, and then unfortunately it didn't happen. It came and went. But, you know, Shawn has made it pretty clear that he just has no interest in ever wrestling again. Now, the thought of Shawn Michaels against AJ Styles is very exciting. I have no doubt that Shawn can still go if he wants to. He's still in tremendous shape. But I respect the fact that he's sticking to his guns on this. I'll tell you, as disappointed as I am, I respect him for it. I respect the fact that he retired, and unlike most people, he has stayed retired. He has stayed true to the stipulation. Now it's going to be what? Probably 7 years. It's a long time. I mean, that is a long time. And by now, you know, you think of the different scenarios they put this guy in. If you remember, Shawn basically, in a way, he kind of turned on Daniel Bryan a few years ago, and that started up rumors that, oh, maybe they're going to build to Shawn and Daniel Bryan, and Daniel Bryan is his protege. Surely he'll want to work with him. And no, he didn't. And that probably should have been a telltale sign right there, the fact that he didn't want to work with Daniel Bryan. I mean, I don't know if that match was ever formally proposed to him or not, but all the people that he could have worked with over the last 3 or 4 years that he did not, or that he flat out just refused, tells you all you need to know about whether or not Shawn Michaels is ever wrestling another match again. He ain't Steve Austin. Steve Austin, for years and years, I think he finally is over this now, but for years, he would always leave the door open. He would never shut that down. And it was smart because, you know, hey, if the right offer comes along for enough money, then why not, right? But for years, he would never say he was retired. He would always say, well, you know, you never know. And we know CM Punk badly wanted to wrestle him, and Austin kind of teased that maybe he'd be interested in it. And he said, if I was going to come back, Punk would be the guy. And, you know, if I wanted to come back, I could get another 2 years. And it wasn't until recently that Austin finally just said, yeah, I'm not coming back. But he kind of left the door open for all those years. Shawn has never really done that. I mean, he's been pretty declarative, I think, that I ain't coming back. So you got to respect the guy for that. I'm not upset that he said no to the match. I'm upset that WWE had no plans for AJ Styles at WrestleMania and had to run to Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels, if he did nothing else here, he confirmed what we kind of already knew, which is that, and it's unbelievable to me, that this guy who was your MVP for 2016 and is inarguably one of the best in the world, you didn't even have a match for him on your biggest show of the year. That is just unbelievable to me.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
Nakamura has been added to the upcoming NXT UK tour after all. I would not read much into this. I think even if he is on the tour, I still say he makes his main roster debut after WrestleMania. But it's just funny, after mentioning that last week, they did add him to the tour this week. NXT this week, we had Oney Lorcan and Andrade Cien Almas. Almas is an interesting guy. I wanted to talk about this for a little bit here because not exactly my favorite performer from NXT, the one who gets me the most excited about watching the show every week. But he's an interesting case in that, you know, he came in with a lot of fanfare from his days as La Sombra. And he's a great wrestler. I mean, nobody will deny that. But he just wasn't connecting, right? He didn't click. People turned on him. And the first step to correcting that was ditching that god-awful Chippendales outfit that he would come out in. I mean, he still has the hat, but the hat actually is good for heel heat now. But he got rid of that whole outfit, and they turned him heel. And even now, when I hear his music hit and he first walks out, I'm kind of indifferent towards the guy. But by the end of most of his matches, I'm sitting here thinking, man, that was a hell of a match. And I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just the chemistry that he has with Lorcan, because Oney Lorcan's obviously really good too. But Almas just has this weird thing about him where I just don't care when I see him come out, but he wins me over in the end, as he did here on this show. Now, will that work for him on the main roster? I don't know. It didn't really work for Del Rio. I know Del Rio's a friend of his. Del Rio's a good wrestler, and Del Rio won a bunch of championships. I'm not saying he wasn't successful in that way, but it's not like the fans ever really truly got behind Del Rio as much as they wanted him to be this big, you know, heel at first, but then they turned him babyface and he was going to be the big Latin hero, the big Latin babyface. It just never worked. It just never really worked out. And it was hard for me to care about Del Rio too. So I don't know how it's going to be for him when he eventually gets the call up, but he has this whole arrogant prick heel thing down pat. It works for him. I just don't know how it's going to translate when he does get that call up, but I'm digging what he's doing right now. I think he's someone who I think could benefit from having a secondary title in NXT. Maybe that's what's missing for guys like him and Roderick Strong. They need something to fight for. But this here turned into a hell of a match down the stretch to the point where it got chance of this is awesome. Lorcan hit a half and half suplex for a near fall. Almas hit an impressive back handspring Pele kick, excuse me, to the back of Lorcan's head. I used to say Pele, and I got raked over the coals for it. He hit him with the running knees in the corner. He finished him off with the hammerlock DDT. This turned into a great match. This was very fun. Asuka made short work of Priscilla Zuniga. Before the match even started, Asuka grabbed the mic. She said, "Ember Moon, this is your head." And before Priscilla could even think about what she just heard, she had her head kicked into the fifth row. Asuka hit a delayed German suplex, went for the easy pin, but yanked her head up before the three. Ooh, classic heel move there by Asuka. She wanted to play with her a little bit more. Finally, she got her in the Asuka lock, got the submission. She held on for an extra 10 seconds or so. And then she cut an angry promo in Japanese, which sounded really badass, even though I couldn't understand a word she said. It's like the It's like the Japanese commentary on those New Japan pay-per-views. I have no idea what they're saying, but they say it with such passion and such conviction. I enjoy it more than I do the English commentary. The Revival cut a promo talking about how they're better than Arn and Tully, better than the Midnight Express, better than the Hart Foundation. We don't do flips, we're here to make money. And they vowed to win the tag team titles back. We got a long video package hyping the Nakamura-Bobby Roode rematch at TakeOver. This one went all the way back to Nakamura's debut in Dallas last year, the very same night that Bobby Roode first showed up. He was in the crowd that night. I thought this was really well done. Heavy Machinery debuts this Wednesday on NXT. I'm very excited to see these two back on TV. It's Otis and... I'm so excited to see these guys back on TV. I forgot the other guy's name. But I am. I'm very excited to see them back on TV. Otis is the one I always think of because he just looks so weird, right? He's like kind of short and stocky, but he's a big, big dude. And he's got a very unique look about him. And so I'm very happy to see them get some of the spotlight put on them for a change. I'll think of the other guy's name at some point. It just popped out of my head. Andrea DeMarco was interviewing Cassius Ohno after his loss to Bobby Roode last week when he was interrupted by The Drifter, who sang him a song. He said Ohno doesn't belong in NXT, and this resulted in Cassius Ohno challenging him to a Loser Leaves NXT match next week. And all I can say is that if The Drifter gets to the main roster before Nakamura does, I'm going to bang my head against the wall. Main event had Sanity and No Way Jose, Roderick Strong, and Ty Dillinger going to a lame double DQ finish. Things broke down. The referee lost control of the match, so he just threw it away. He gave up. Let's call it what it is. The referee tapped out. Nikki Cross jumped on Dillinger's back after the match, after all the babyfaces had gained control. So she jumps on his back, and all of a sudden this mystery woman shows up and attacks Nikki Cross. It was the former Heidi Lovelace, whose name in NXT is Ruby Riot. That's going to be her name, which actually sounds kind of cool. I've heard worse names. I suspect that after a while, it'll probably be just shortened to Ruby. She's got tattoos across her chest, a very distinctive look, to say the least, as compared to the other women on the roster. She stood in the ring with all the baby faces, and so this feud, I guess, is far from over. And that brings us to NXT TakeOver, the big card from Orlando coming up next Saturday. I believe TakeOver is at the Amway Center? I think it is. I think the Hall of Fame, TakeOver, and Raw are all from the same building, I think. So I should know this because I have tickets. So wherever the building is, that's where I will be. We're going to do the predictions here because I'm doing a podcast on Saturday and that's not going to give people enough time to hear it. So we'll do the predictions here. Now, I'm doing this not knowing what may happen on the Go Home show this Wednesday. I don't think it's going to change my opinions much. So let's just kind of run through the card here. We have the debut of Aleister Black, the former Tommy End. He debuts against Andrade Cien Almas. I think it's fair to say that... Tommy End is not losing in his debut, so I'll go with him. We have the Authors of Pain, DIY, and The Revival in a triple threat elimination match for the NXT Tag Team Championship. This is a tough one. They added the elimination stipulation, so this could go a number of different ways. The most shocking thing would be for the Authors of Pain to be eliminated first. I don't know if perhaps a disqualification would count. I guess it would. If it's elimination style. So I could envision a scenario where the Authors of Pain get eliminated first because they get DQ'd or something along those lines. And that leaves DIY rather and The Revival. And we know the kind of matches they've had before. And I think in the end, DIY gets the tag team titles back. So DIY is my pick to become two-time NXT tag team champions. We have Asuka defending her NXT women's title against Ember Moon. Asuka has now been on NXT for well over a year. She has been undefeated that entire time. I think she's coming up on 18 months or so that she has been undefeated in singles competition. She has yet to be beaten. And it is possible that Asuka can end up on the main roster at some point without having lost a single match in NXT. You know, just because you're getting called up doesn't mean you have to lose. In fact, that could be part of her story on the main roster. Maybe that's how they kind of differentiate her from all the other women. They say, look, Asuka is the only female ever to go undefeated in NXT. She still has yet to be beaten. And they could actually play that whole angle up on the main roster. So it's an even bigger deal when she eventually gets beaten for the first time. Just an idea. I don't think that's going to happen. In fact, I think that Ember Moon is probably going to be the one. I think Ember Moon has been promoted in such a way that makes me, you know, especially with this eclipse, right? They started this story out of nowhere a few weeks ago of the eclipse is such a dangerous move, and it put Billy Kay on the shelf for a week or whatever. And so they're making her finisher out to be a big deal, which is cool, because when she hits it, it'll mean that much more. I think she's going to win. I think she's going to win the championship. I think she's going to win with the eclipse, and I think Asuka will be beaten. So Ember Moon is my pick. And finally, in the main event, we have Bobby Roode defending the NXT Championship in a rematch from TakeOver San Antonio against Shinsuke Nakamura. I'm going to hold out hope that Nakamura will, in fact, make it to the main roster before the Drifter does. And I think it'll be after WrestleMania. I don't know which brand. If I had to take a guess, I would guess Raw, even though I think he belongs on SmackDown. But, you know, sometimes what your heart and your head, you know, they have different opinions of things. My heart tells me SmackDown. My head tells me Raw. And so I don't think he's getting the belt back here. If he did, he'd become the first ever three-time NXT champion. I just don't see what's served by that. I just don't. I don't see there being another big heel on the horizon right now in NXT for him to feud with after Bobby Roode. Whereas if Bobby Roode retains, which is my prediction, I think he will, you could always go back to Cassius Ohno. You've got Hideo Itami now who's ready to come back. We'll see how quickly they push Aleister Black. Maybe he'll get the big push to the top. You have options as far as you know, babyface guys to put in there against Bobby Roode. So how they're going to do it is a little tougher. I really don't know. I could see whoever the next challenger is going to be potentially getting involved, whoever that may be. But I'm going to go with Bobby Roode. I think he keeps the championship. And also, I wouldn't be shocked if they added one more match to the show. They only have four. It is a two-hour show. You could do four matches in 2 hours, but I think they're going to add an eight-person tag, would not be surprised, with Sanity, including Nikki Cross, against Dillinger, Roddy, No Way Jose, and Ruby Riott. And if they don't add it to the TakeOver card, I figure they'll probably just tape it at the arena for TV the following week. So those are my NXT TakeOver predictions. We'll see how well. I usually do pretty well with these shows. WrestleMania, when I do the WrestleMania predictions, that'll be a lot harder. It's a big difference between four matches as compared to 14. I guess with the NXT show, though, there's a lot less room for error when it comes to the predictions. So, some other news bits here before I get to your questions. The World of Sports series on ITV in the UK is officially a go, and they are partnering with Impact Wrestling. The series is set to run a total of 10 episodes initially. Jeff Jarrett will be the executive producer representing the Impact side of things. To what extent they're involved, I'm not entirely sure, beyond just using some of the talents from the Impact roster. I don't know if Anthem is helping to fund this thing or what. I suspect they are. This week's facepalm moment actually belongs to Anthem. I facepalmed so hard I gave myself a concussion. According to this week's Observer, Impact and Ring of Honor had signed off on a working agreement. They were going to work together just a couple of months ago to have the Young Bucks and the Broken Hardys trade wins back and forth on each other's shows. So that was the plan. The Broken Hardys and the Young Bucks, which would have been a hot feud that a lot of people would have been invested in and interested in seeing, it was going to play out on Ring of Honor television and TNA television. And the Young Bucks would make their big return to Impact, because remember, they used to be Generation Me back in the day, so right? They've been in TNA before. But the Young Bucks, as themselves, would have made their Impact debut at the tapings in April, and they would have had a bunch of big matches on each other's shows, and it would have... And plus, you know, part of that would have been a big match at the Hardy Compound between the two teams, and it would have culminated in the end in a ladder match. Well, that it didn't happen, and instead the ladder match is actually going to happen this weekend at the ROH show in Lakeland. All of this, this entire agreement went up in smoke after Anthem waited until the last minute to make new offers to Matt and Jeff. So before the threat of a lawsuit and all that stuff, go back before that. Why are the Hardys not in TNA anymore, right? They're not in TNA anymore because they felt disrespected by Anthem. They felt they had a verbal agreement. They wanted to stay. It was a great scenario for them and their family. And Revy could be on TV as part of the skits, and Maxwell and Senor Benjamin. If you really think about it, that and the limited schedule, it was probably the best fit for Matt and Jeff. So it's not a matter of, well, we want to leave. They had a verbal agreement that they would stay. And then the new ownership took over, and it just wasn't a priority for them. They waited until the last minute to get them a contract, and then certain things about the contract changed. That's how Anthem chose to operate. And so that scared the Hardys off, and Jeff Hardy was just disgusted with the whole thing, supposedly. He said, I'm not even signing. Matt was still considering it. Jeff was already like, peace out. All because of the way Anthem handled the situation. And then look at the way that Anthem has handled the situation since then. Going after them and threatening them. Going on YouTube in retroactively adding trademark symbols to all of the Hardy videos on YouTube, which is just fucking comical. So think about the way Anthem has handled this. As compared to this agreement that was already in place to do this big thing that was going to get a lot of fans really interested in both products. And on top of all the other stuff Anthem did, I guess, to screw it all up, the legal letter they sent around to all the cable companies on the day of the Ring of Honor pay-per-view, to the point where Dish Network caved, they scared off Dish Network, they dropped the entire pay-per-view, and that obviously cost Ring of Honor some money. And so if the chance to work together with Ring of Honor wasn't already dead, that damn sure killed it. It's like, it's called looking at the bigger picture. You had an agreement with another promotion to work together. All of this other stuff happened that didn't have to happen the way it did, and it blew the whole deal. Looking at the bigger picture, something Anthem apparently doesn't really care much about. Amazing. Let's get to your questions here. In the mailbag. If you have them, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We have Steven. We have a lot of international questions this week. Steven from Belgium. While I've been a wrestling fan for over 20 years, it's only been a few years that I have started listening regularly to wrestling podcasts and looking up news online. And I realize that this is the third time that WrestleMania plans, or at least main events, are being spoiled online up to 6 months before the actual event. It's also been 3 years that I can't feel any form of excitement for the show. While it's true that these past Manias weren't exactly memorable, I was wondering if you think online spoilers for such big events could be a big factor in diluting fan interest in the show. How much, for you, do spoilers temper your enjoyment of a show like WrestleMania? It's a fair question. Spoilers don't really have any impact for me as far as WrestleMania goes, because WrestleMania plans have been leaked far longer than the internet has been around for. So when you had The Torch with Wade Keller, and you had The Observer with Dave Meltzer, and you had other things, even in the mid-90s, you had the wrestling hotlines, and there was something called Peter Scaretta, who I think now works for or runs the website Slash Film. I think in like a former life, I don't know if he wants people to know about this or not, but he was like a big wrestling fan. I don't know. Maybe he still is. I used to be subscribed to an email newsletter that he would send around called I think it was called the Matt Rap. So this stuff has been around for years and years and years. And now it's just a lot easier to access because you have the proliferation of the internet and mobile, and everything is at your fingertips, right? There's tons of wrestling sites. There's tons of wrestling podcasts. All those newsletters and stuff are still around, but they've been around for 20, 30 years. So this is nothing new. You just have more access to stuff than you would have, you know, 10 or 20 years ago. It's up to you what you do with that. So it's not a matter of spoilers ruining WrestleMania for you. It's a matter of you ruining WrestleMania for you. And I would say that to anybody who complains about spoilers. Yes, you can accidentally be spoiled. That is true. But when you log on to a wrestling site, right? Whether it's an SE Scoops or... Look, WWE.com has spoiled things on their own website. They have spoiled things on their own website. And so the best advice that I can give you is you either live in a cocoon and you avoid all wrestling websites, or you just accept the fact that there are going to be spoilers. Now, how far deep you go into those spoilers is up to you. If you see a headline that says WrestleMania 34 main event revealed, you don't have to click it. Your curiosity may get the best of you. You probably are going to click it at some point, but that's entirely up to you. You have that choice. So that's really the only thing I could say is that unless you live in a bubble or you live in a cocoon, there are just going to be things that are spoiled for you. And I don't see how knowing in advance what the main event of WrestleMania is going to be spoils the ultimate enjoyment of the event. What it spoils, I guess, potentially maybe is some of the build. You know, if the element of surprise is big to you, then yeah, spoilers do tend to ruin the element of surprise. If you're big on surprises, if you're in the surprise business and you love that stuff, then yeah, spoilers suck. But I watch WrestleMania every year and I go to a lot of WrestleManias, and what determines my enjoyment of a WrestleMania is the card that they put together. So if I knew a year ago that they were going to do AJ Styles against Shane McMahon, I would have felt the same way then that I feel about it now. But if AJ and Shane go out there next Sunday and they tear the house down, then I'm gonna enjoy it. You know, if the top three or four matches at WrestleMania all deliver, this is going to be a great WrestleMania. The fact that I knew the matches 6 months before or 3 months before, you know, who gives a shit? That, to me, doesn't really affect your ultimate enjoyment of the show itself. You know, it could take the edge off some of the build, make it a little less, necessary maybe for you to pay as close attention to some of the weekly TV. Maybe there's certain things you might want to, oh, well, I already know this is going to happen, so I'll skip that. But I don't think it really tempers my enjoyment of the show. A bad show would temper my enjoyment of the show. Shamar from Raleigh, North Carolina. Can you see WWE setting up a triple threat with Undertaker putting over both Strowman and Reigns on his way out? Takes a lot of stress off of Undertaker himself and puts Strowman in a match at WrestleMania. Well, that's not going to happen now, but looking back on it, let's say 2 weeks ago, yeah, you know what? I'm not a huge fan of triple threats, but I think it would have been a good idea to add Braun Strowman to the match. You know, Braun has had a feud going for a couple of months now with Roman Reigns. When they had the stare down between Undertaker and Braun, I thought maybe they were actually going to do that. I thought they were going to add him to the match. It got a "This is awesome" chant, which told you there was at least some fan interest in seeing Undertaker go one-on-one with Braun Strowman. And I would actually put Strowman in a high-profile match at WrestleMania. As of right now, Braun Strowman has no match at WrestleMania. I assume he'll be dumped in the Battle Royal this week. We'll find out on TV, but he has no match. And so it would have been cool for him to be in a high-profile match on the show. I think he's worked hard enough and he's shown enough to where people take him seriously as a big, scary monster. You put a big, scary monster right in the mix with Undertaker and Roman Reigns, also two big guys. And yeah, I think it would have made for an interesting match. And it would have made the finish interesting in that it could go a number of different ways. When you have three people in there instead of two, does Undertaker lose and essentially put both of them over? Does Strowman get the win, but Undertaker doesn't take the fall? You know, how does that work? Does Roman just beat them both? that would be the wrong move, I think. But certainly in terms of the reaction it would get, I don't think people would be very happy about that. But then again, I guess if Roman Reigns is going to be in the main event next year, then, you know, I don't know. I've said my piece on that. I have pitched my idea on what I think should happen at WrestleMania, how the match should end, and what should happen after. What they do, I'm sure, will be very different than what I proposed, and very wrong, because I just don't think it does Roman any favors. Medi from Las Vegas, what are your thoughts on WWE holding a pay-per-view in Ireland, specifically SummerSlam? You've mentioned SummerSlam going to the UK, but I think Ireland would be great also. You have Finn Balor, Becky Lynch, and Sheamus. Balor could be the British Bulldog of 92 and headline with a big win. The same could be said for Becky Lynch. the Aviva Stadium in Ireland holds over 50,000 and looks incredible. You may even be able to get Conor McGregor to make a special appearance. What are your thoughts? I think it makes a lot of sense. I like the idea. I've not been to Ireland before. That might be an excuse for me to get my ass over there. I've had friends who have gone there. They've enjoyed it. Usually all they do is drink, but they've enjoyed it. you're telling me there's a stadium that fits 50,000 people. They've got some Irish-born stars or stars with, of an Irish heritage on their show that they could kind of market the show around. I could see Balor, who was Universal Champion, right, and is going to have to work his way back up to try to get the title back. If they did it in such a way where it culminates in this big show in Ireland, then yeah, you could put Balor in the main event. Absolutely. But it's interesting though, you know, if you do a show from Ireland, well, I guess SummerSlam is what would make the most sense because I just don't see them doing it for a WrestleMania. If you wanted a WrestleMania in Ireland, Ireland or some city in Ireland would have to bid because that's just how it works now. I mean, if Ireland wanted WrestleMania bad enough and they made an offer, I'm sure WWE would consider it. But SummerSlam, I think, is what would make the most sense. Maybe, you know, SummerSlam 2018, since they're already booked for Brooklyn this year. In fact, I think tickets went on sale for SummerSlam this week and sold out already. So I like the idea. I like the idea of going to Ireland and doing a show there. And if they can get Conor, all the better. I don't know what they'd have to pay to get him. Let's see what happens in this fight with Mayweather. Supposedly they're going to fight in a boxing match in September. Why Conor would agree to a boxing match against Floyd Mayweather, I have no idea. It just sounds like a bad idea. So we'll see what his marketing potential is like, I guess, coming out of that show. If he's really just embarrassed on that show, that could really harm his drawing power, I think, coming out of that show. Dave from Middlesbrough, Kentucky. If you take King of the Ring 1993's booking with today's roster from start to finish, by the end, who is your king? See, Dave knows, you know, King of the Ring 93 is one of my all-time favorite pay-per-views. Who would be in the role of king? I think the closest thing, I was going to say Sammy, because Sammy, Brett was kind of like the underdog in a way in the tournament, but it's not exactly the same. Sammy is not on the same level as Brett. He's a much bigger underdog. He really just, he loses quite a bit. Brett was already a world champion by that point. They took the title off him. King of the Ring was just something to give him because he wasn't getting a title shot. I would say AJ, honestly. I think AJ Styles would fit right into that Bret Hart role. In a lot of ways, I think there's a lot of similarities between him and Brett. And I would do it where, you know, AJ is the babyface, not the heel. And I would say, you know, AJ makes it all the way to the finals. And, you know, I could see Braun Strowman being in the Bam Bam Bigelow role from 93, where Braun maybe gets a win in the opening round and then gets a bye to the finals. And so he's the fresh, you know, monster, and AJ's already wrestled two matches and he's exhausted and he's trying to win the whole thing. And the way I would do it, though, I'd probably have Braun win. You know, whereas Brett won the whole thing, he beat Bam Bam. I would probably have AJ come close, but then in the end, Strowman wins. So that's how I would do it. Hytham from Saudi Arabia. I watched on YouTube What Culture's 10 Fascinating Facts About WrestleMania 22 video, and they mentioned that Bruce Pritchard suggested Shawn Michaels was scheduled to face Eddie Guerrero. Unfortunately, Eddie passed away. Is this information accurate? If so, what do you think of this idea? I've talked about this on the podcast before. My understanding has always been, and I know there's been a writer who I think was writing for WWE at the time who's come out since and said that, to his knowledge, there were never any talks. He certainly was never told if the plan was to prepare for Shawn and Eddie at Mania. That doesn't mean it wasn't discussed. That doesn't mean that was not a plan on the table. My understanding was that one of the ideas discussed for WrestleMania 22 was to do a Shawn Michaels-Eddie Guerrero match. And then Eddie passed away in November, and it probably just never went anywhere beyond the idea stages. Had Eddie lived, yeah, I think there's a pretty good chance we would have gotten Shawn Michaels and Eddie Guerrero that year. And, you know, it's weird. I was just talking about Shawn Michaels turning down the match earlier with AJ Styles. Is there another wrestler other than maybe, like, Bret Hart? Because there's been a lot of fantasy warfare, Bret Hart, if he didn't have to retire, all the matches that Bret could have had against guys like Kurt Angle and John Cena, and then you look even at the current roster, although by now Bret would be in his late 50s, but Shawn Michaels is probably the guy I think about who realistically could have had all these amazing matches with people. It just never happened, right? Like, he worked with Benoit, but he never did, and he worked with Kurt, but he never worked with Eddie, and I think that would have been a pretty incredible match. He never did get to work with Daniel Bryan, even though it seemed like maybe they were going in that direction. He could have worked with AJ Styles, and that's not going to happen. And other guys too, like Seth Rollins. You know, there are a lot of really interesting matches, I think, that Shawn Michaels could have had, and he just, you know, doesn't want to do it. So, but yeah, my understanding is that was going to be the match. Gabriel from Nairobi, Kenya. WWE has introduced talk shows during its programming as a way of providing interview time for storyline continuity and sometimes some comic relief. What are your three ranked best talk shows in WWE with regard to the past and the present day? My three picks... Well, Piper's Pit has to be number one. Piper's Pit was... Look, there may have been talk show segments before Piper, but Piper made it famous. There are a lot of very famous moments on Piper's Pit, from the coconut to... what I remember as a kid was Hogan and Andre, and that was part of the build to their match at WrestleMania 3. Hogan and Andre were friends. They did this whole thing where they were presented with a trophy, and Andre walked out on him on the set of Piper's Pit, and then, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of fond memories from Piper's Pit, and Roddy was the best at it, so that would have to be number one. I would put... that's a good point, actually. What would be number two? I would put I'm going to put the barbershop at number two, and I'm going to put the highlight reel at number three. I'm putting the barbershop at number two for one reason, and that's because of the Shawn Michaels-Marty Jannetty segment from 92. It's such a famous segment that still people talk about and point to this day, that for that alone, I will rank that as my number two. And I'll put the highlight reel at number three. It kind of is, in some ways, I guess a modern-day version of Piper's Pit. I feel like the highlight reel was modeled after Piper's Pit. And Jericho has had some memorable segments on there himself. I mean, the biggest one probably is with Shawn Michaels, where he threw Shawn into the Jeritron. And I don't know if that was part of the storyline. I guess that's how Shawn got his lazy eye, right? He got the eye injury. And there have been some other memorable moments. I remember, I don't hear people talking about this very often, but in the build-up to WrestleMania 21, Jericho had Randy Orton on the highlight reel and Jake the Snake Roberts. And this was when they were building to Orton against The Undertaker, and Jake came out as a former opponent of The Undertaker's at WrestleMania, kind of to warn him, and It was a good segment, and it ended with Randy laying him out with the RKO. Jake wasn't in the best of shape at that time, not like he is now, but, you know, there's been a lot of memorable highlight reel segments over the years. And I think it's the closest thing to a Piper's Pit that we got. But I gotta put the barbershop at number two. The Shawn and Marty thing is just the best. Dragon Master from an undisclosed location. What up, Dragon Master? Do you think WWE should let their writers use marijuana, mushrooms, LSD, etc. to make their writing more creative and interesting? Well, see, based on some of their writing now, I thought they were already on LSD and mushrooms and stuff. So you're saying that it would actually improve their creativity. I'm okay with that. Look, I wish they would be more creative with what they do with The Undertaker. That's why I ranted on it for 15 minutes before. It's very lazy. So maybe the writers need to get on the shrooms. And then imagine what they would come up with for a character like The Undertaker, this undead zombie guy, if the writing team was on mushrooms and LSD. I would love to see what storyline ideas they come up with for the guy when they are sitting around in a room doing all that kind of stuff. It'd be very entertaining. Felipe from Brazil, who do you think could be considered the face of WCW? When I think of the face of WCW, I always think of Sting. He's the first person I think of. I think Ric Flair would be right behind him at number two. But I really associate Flair more with like the NWA, Jim Crockett Promotions. Flair and Dusty are the first names I think of when I think of that. But Sting was the man, man. I mean, Sting was the man for much of the time that he was there. He was on top almost the entire time. I think the only time I can remember Sting not really being in the main event picture was he had either the U.S. title or the TV title in like 95, and he was feuding with Lord Steven Regal. But every other time I think of Sting, he was always, you know, in the main event picture. You know, I guess he teamed with Lex Luger sometimes, but no, I think of Sting. And unlike Flair, he never jumped ship to WWE. Now, there's a reason they called him the franchise of WCW. So Sting would be the face of that company. Dan from Cleveland, Ohio, I spoke with you on Facebook a while back about ideas for rebooking WrestleMania 8. My question is, if you had the chance to rebook any pay-per-view in history, which one would you pick and what would you book? I'd have to think about that. You know what? I'm going to stick with what I said to you. WrestleMania 8, which I like, by the way. Some people don't like WrestleMania 8. I like it, but if I had to rebook it, then it would be Hogan Flair for the championship. I would have dragged out that Randy Savage and Jake Roberts feud until WrestleMania, and I would have blown it off at the Hoosier Dome. I would have blown it off there in a loser leaves town match. It's one of these things where, you know, this company's not big enough for the both of us, and it was such a personal feud that you have to put a stipulation like that in. And Jake was leaving anyway, right? Jake was unhappy. He was going to leave. So you do a loser leaves town with him and Savage. And you take Sid Justice and you put him against The Undertaker. And there you go. You got your top three matches right there. And I would keep Bret and Piper. I would not change that. You have Bret Hart and Roddy Piper underneath for the Intercontinental title. And you've got your key matches all lined up right there. So that's how I would tweak WrestleMania 8. Billy in Des Moines. I recently watched Bam Bam Bigelow's one and only MMA fight against Kimo Leopoldo on YouTube. And he gets absolutely destroyed. I then saw a shoot interview where Bam Bam claims it was a work and he got a big payday to go in and take an ass whooping. That is really hard for me to believe because it looks like he just got flat out owned by a more experienced fighter. What do you think? I don't buy it. I think he was just trying to save face. I went and watched the fight after I got your email. I had never seen it before. I knew he did MMA. I thought he did like one or two fights, just like I know Del Rio. Alberto Del Rio actually did an MMA fight once in his mask, by the way, which is comical. So when I got your email, I went on YouTube, I found the fight, I watched it. You ain't lying. It was 2 minutes of just uncomfortable destruction is the best way I can put it. Because he just immediately gets taken down and he is just trying to shield himself and not get killed. And he gets busted open, he's all bloodied. I mean, he took a beating in there. It's like, you know, it reminded me, what's that scene from The Simpsons with the kid that says, stop, stop, he's already dead, right? Whatever that scene is, whatever episode that's from. That's what I thought of. That pretty much sums up this fight. The guy got his ass handed to him, plain and simple. I think he was trying to save face by making up a story. This Kimo guy, Kimo is a beast. Trust me, they didn't have to pay someone with exactly 0 years of fight experience. Okay, what did Bam Bam claim? They paid him $100,000 to go in there and lose? Come on. I don't buy that for a second. I don't buy that they paid Bam Bam Bigelow with exactly zero fights on his resume to go in there and take a dive against the guy that was going to beat his ass anyway. I just don't buy it. Vineet from Mumbai, India. Who could have replaced Hulk Hogan in the role of main WWF star to help the company go national in 83-84? Jim Cornette was asked about this on his podcast. Comment if you can on each of these options that they talked about or any others that you can think of. Kerry Von Erich, Austin Idol, Dusty Rhodes, Ric Flair, Sergeant Slaughter, and Randy Savage. Austin Idol, I'll put him on the side. I know of him. I'm not familiar enough with him to tell you whether or not he could have replaced Hogan. I'm going to say no. Kerry Von Erich, Kerry Von Erich was not going to replace Hogan. He just wasn't. And there's a reason that Kerry Von Erich was not on top in a major company outside of World Class, and even in World Class. I mean, he won the NWA title. I know he had the big match with Flair. I think it was in 84. They took the belt off him, I feel like, almost right away. He just wasn't dependable. He was what he was. I mean, he was a drug addict. He was addicted to drugs. He was always pilled up or doped up or whatever it was that he did. The stories about him, there's tons and tons and tons of stories. If you look at him in WWF when he was the Texas Tornado, I don't think there was a single time I ever saw him when he was out there in the ring or doing a promo where he didn't look like he was just completely out of it. All the time. So there's absolutely no way he could have been put in that role and succeeded without fucking up. I just don't see it. So I say no to Kerry Von Erich. Dusty Rhodes. Look, Dusty's awesome. Dusty can talk. There's no way Vince McMahon would have accepted someone like Dusty Rhodes in that role. I mean, if you're asking me, if we're trying to be realistic here, who could Vince McMahon have seen? Who could Vince McMahon have worked with and put in that role? He wasn't putting Dusty Rhodes in that role. There's no way that was ever going to happen. Ric Flair? Flair? I don't know. I don't know because I just feel like Flair was a much, much better heel than he was as a babyface. And so Vince needed a hot babyface to put in that role. Flair didn't have that larger than life, like physique and look that a lot of those WWF guys had at the time. All the guys that were all jacked up, and Flair didn't really fit that model. He didn't really fit that role. So it's not a matter of talent or his inability to have the gift of gab or anything like that. In that role as their flagship guy in 83, 84 when they went national, I'm not even sure Flair would have been able to fill that role or would have been able to go as far with it as Hogan did. Sergeant Slaughter, I know he used to be very popular. I know he was the All-American hero, which is how they build Hogan. I don't see Slaughter being the one. And Randy Savage, God bless him, he's a favorite of mine. I don't think it would have worked with Savage either. I'll be honest with you. I don't know that there is anyone. And I think that was the point that Cornette was making as well. I don't think anybody else really could have taken that role on the way that Hogan did. Hogan just, he wasn't the best wrestler. Maybe those other guys could have wrestled circles around him, but it wasn't about that. You know, when they went national in 83, 84, it wasn't like the mainstream public was so much interested in who's the best wrestler. They saw this guy who was out there wearing yellow, who was just gigantic, which Hogan was back then. He was very charismatic. He was very loud. He had these very colorful promos. He would, let me tell you something, dude. Let me tell you something, Jack. Come on, brother. Like Savage and guys like that were cutting colorful promos, but Hogan had the charisma, and he had the physical, he had the physique and the physical look to make that role work. I think Vince knew what he was doing. That's why Vince wanted him. That's why Vince, stole him away from Vern Gagne. He took him away from the AWA because Hogan was getting over as a big baby face there, in the Twin Cities. So all Vince did was say, hey, I want that guy. I want to take that and just make it bigger. Hulkamania wasn't born in WWF. Hulkamania was born in the AWA. All Vince did was take it and make it bigger. He blew it up. And I don't know that any of those other guys would have had the same level of success in that role that Hogan did. Not Flair, not Savage, not Dusty. I think Hogan was the guy for it. And if it wasn't going to be Hogan, if Hogan got hurt or if Hogan got fired or if Hogan wasn't around, they could have put Piper in there and made him a babyface, but I just don't think it would have worked. I think it had to be Hogan. Randall from Juneau, Alaska. When a wrestler is near the ropes while having someone in a hold, abdominal stretch for example, why is it illegal for them to reach for or grab the rope? What exactly is the heel's advantage by doing this? You rarely see this done nowadays, but as a kid this seemed commonplace. Well, first of all, if you've got somebody in a submission hold, the rule is you can't grab the rope. So that's number one. But what advantage does it give them, theoretically, if, let's say, you have somebody in an abdominal stretch, if you grab the top rope and you pull, right, you're adding more pressure. You're stretching them even more. If you have somebody in a figure four leg lock, and we've seen Flair do this how many times over the years, you reach back, you grab the rope, it's just leverage that allows you to apply a little more pressure, right? That was always the idea. It's just more leverage that lets you put more pressure on the hold. And believe me, I know this because a time or two when I was younger, I would put my brother in a figure four leg lock and I didn't have ropes here, but I would grab onto something, maybe the couch or the leg of a chair and I would pull and, well, I guess the chair never worked because I would end up pulling the chair towards me. But if I grabbed onto a piece of furniture or something, I don't know, he was still screaming all the same, so it must have worked. Andrew in Arkansas, it's a good thing he doesn't listen to this show. Andrew in Arkansas, during the Attitude Era, WWE signed Dan Severn and Dr. Death Steve Williams. Severn had been a huge name in the NWA and the MMA world, while Williams had main evented matches in the NWA and WCW. Yet neither one of them had very eventful runs in WWE. Buy or sell on who do you think was more misused and had the higher ceiling, Dan Severn or Dr. Death? Well, both of them were very scary, right? They scared me. I wouldn't want to be caught in a dark alley with either one of those guys. I would have to buy on Dr. Death, sell on Dan Severn. As scary as Dan Severn was, I'm not saying he wasn't tough. He absolutely was. He was very plain to me. I don't know. When he was in there, he was just very vanilla and very kind of just very boring. Dr. Death, he had a good look. Big guy. He could talk. I never really heard Severn talk. I don't know. Maybe Dan Severn has this great promo cutting ability that I never got to see. But I know Dr. Death is a very colorful guy. I remember some of his work from those days in the NWA. He could wrestle, he could talk, he was a very imposing, figure. I think that in terms of pro wrestling, I would have to buy on Dr. Death. And look, in terms of who was more misused. So when Severn came in, what was the one thing that Dan Severn was most famous for? Beating D'Lo Brown and stretching him so badly that D'Lo had to wear the chest protector. That's where the chest protector came from. I don't remember a single thing beyond that Dan Severn did of any note in WWE. Now, Dr. Death, when they brought him in, the plan, according to Jim Ross anyway, who would know because they were best friends, and JR probably is the one who got him in, the plan had been to groom him as a top heel to challenge Stone Cold for the championship. So instead, he ends up in this brawl for all thing, gets completely embarrassed, he gets hurt, and because he got hurt, he got beat, got knocked out. And that was it. That was the end of the Dr. Death experiment. We never really got to see the potential that he had because he got hurt, he got embarrassed. And after that, he was gone. But the plan was for him to challenge Steve Austin for the championship. So you tell me who had the who had the tougher break there? You know what I mean? Like, who was more misused? I would argue that Dr. Death was. By putting him in the Brawl for All, they misused him. Or at least if you're going to put him in the Brawl for All, then work the friggin' fights. Don't make them shoot matches. If he wins the Brawl for All, he comes out of it looking like a big tough guy. But they sent him in there in a real fight and he got his ass knocked out. Yeah, I'd say he was more misused. And finally here, Ashton from Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. I've never heard of that before. This is a non-wrestling question. This is a baseball-related question that I wanted to include here. He says, as an Atlanta Braves fan, I understand your Mets are a lot closer to winning a World Series than my guys are. Growing up in the 90s created great memories for me as a fan, especially against the Mets, such as the 1999 National League Championship Series. Of these three former Braves players, which one would you say was the best, or in your case, the worst? Met Killer, Dale Murphy, Chipper Jones, or Greg Maddux? Hope I'm not bringing up too many bad memories. Well, you are bringing up bad memories, but my rage is intensifying here. But I figured I would answer this now. You know, we have opening day just around the corner. It's kind of timely. Opening day coming up. April 3rd, in fact, the Mets opened the season at home against the Braves. So this is a very timely question. And it's also an easy one. The answer is Chipper Jones. Or Larry, as we affectionately call him. It's like the fans used to call him Larry the way fans used to chant Irwin at IRS during WWF shows. When this guy retired, when Chipper Jones retired, they should have made it a national holiday here in New York. It was a great day to know that we would never have to look at his face ever again. This guy trolled us so hard, he named his son Shea. After Shea Stadium, where the Mets used to play, he named his son after our stadium. And why not? I don't know that anybody ever performed better in Shea Stadium than him. And 1999 was just soul-crushing, okay? There is no bigger Met killer than Chipper Jones. And I see now, you know, he's on his third wife, and he's married to an ex-Playboy model. They just had a kid. Good. Good. It's about time he screwed someone other than the Mets for a change. This week in Sound Off History, as we track back into the archives, this is episode 488, of course, so we go all the way back to episode 88, from October 31st, 2009, it was the annual Halloween edition of the Sound Off, featuring news of Hulk Hogan signing with TNA Wrestling, the rocket fuel, as Dixie Carter noted, that TNA needed, along with Eric Bischoff also signing with TNA. Some might say the beginning of the end for TNA, at least as far as the Dixie Carter era is concerned. I also talked about the rumors of TNA wanting to move Impact to Monday nights to compete with Raw. And as I said on that show, don't do it. Do not go ahead and move the show head-to-head with Raw. All you're going to do is cut your audience in half if you do that. And they did end up moving Impact to Mondays, and they did end up getting slaughtered. It wasn't even close, and they ended up limping back to Thursdays, I think it was. Episode 188 from October 30th, 2011, was another Halloween edition, complete with ghouls, goblins, and god-awful booking. Talking Maurice's WWE release, and I also had a review of the Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels DVD that WWE released. Episode 288 from August 18, 2013, talked about Brooke Hogan being fired from TNA, Ric Flair embarrassing himself at a WWE 2K14 panel. That was the event that got Jim Ross fired. Not Ric Flair, mind you, the one who actually caused the episode, but Jim Ross is the one who took the fall on that. Darren Young comes out of the closet. I named what I think was the worst Royal Rumble match of all time, and I explain why I gave up on Total Divas. So if you're ever wondering, how come you don't watch Total Divas? How come you don't watch Total Bellas? I did watch it for 3 episodes, and then I gave up. And if you want to know why, you can find out on episode 288. And finally, episode 388 from June 21st, 2015, discussed Bret Hart's very controversial State of the WWE address that he gave to Sports Illustrated, including his claim that Daniel Bryan's career was over. Samoa Joe, he said, was reckless in injuring Tyson Kidd. And his belief that wrestlers who loudly call spots during their matches are unprofessional. And I also gave my Mount Rushmore of jobbers on that show. So you can check all of that stuff out in the archives, up on thesolemonster.com. It's up on iTunes. You can find the first 10 shows up on our YouTube channel. This is a good time to subscribe to the YouTube channel, because my current plan is to do a WrestleMania review next Monday morning. And if I do, it will go up first on YouTube. And so subscribe now, and that way when the video goes up, you will be alerted and you can listen to it. You can download the link. But definitely subscribe to the channel. My username on there is The Solomonster, all one word. That's the official channel. It's closing in soon on, it's the one that's closing in on 25,000 subscribers soon. That's the official channel. Follow me on Twitter. I'm going to be all over the place next weekend. I'm going to be going to different events. And the best thing to do would be to follow me on Twitter at Solomonster. And I'll be posting all weekend long. I'll be posting during TakeOver, during WrestleMania, during Raw. So follow me on there. And don't forget, you can download the free Fight TV app. It's in the App Store right now. If you've got an iPhone, if you've got an Android device, you can get the app. It is free. It does not cost you anything. For the PWR coverage on there with Damian Nelson and SoCal Val, I don't believe there's any kind of paywall or anything like that. You can watch their coverage from WrestleCon live on the app Friday and Saturday from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern. The interviews that I'm doing from WrestleCon will be airing as part of that coverage. So I don't know exactly when or which ones will make it and which ones won't, but if you want to see at least some of the interviews that I'm going to be doing while I am there, you could check out the live coverage on those days. And if you miss it, it'll be archived there. If you want to, you can watch it after the fact. But thank you to everybody who sent me messages and is very excited about this. And it should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to getting away from this very bipolar weather here in New York, where yesterday it got up to 60. And now I am sitting here again with no heat, freezing my ass off. It's probably about 37 outside, I believe. So I just want to get the hell out of here. 90 seems a little extreme to me, if that's what it is down there right now, but I'll take it. I will not complain. I will not complain. Hopefully I'll see you guys at Tin Roof for our meetup next Sunday, 11 a.m. before WrestleMania. I think I may be looking more forward to that than anything else next weekend. So I will see many of you down there. Until then, again, be well, stay safe. See you in Orlando, and we will be back with a whole lot of content coming up next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off. What?
This Impact show has moved so many times. It's got more fucking moves than Bruno Mars, this show does. Don't believe me, just watch. Impact started out on Friday, then moved to Saturday, Thursday, then they moved it to Monday. They got slaughtered, so they moved it back to Thursday, then they moved it to Wednesday, Friday again, then back to Wednesday, Tuesday, and now back to Thursday. It's like the big show of TV shows. It's turned 1,000 times already, and the only time people pay any attention to it is when it makes them laugh.
Solomonster sounds off. Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.